Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City of Arroyo Grande. This is our council meeting, and this is January the 28th. Our Councilmember Costello will be joining us in about 5 or 10 minutes. He would not want us to wait for him, so we're going to go ahead. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Here. Item 3 on our agenda is our flag salute, and we're very pleased this evening to have Girl Scout Troop 41071 that will be leading us in our flag salute. If you would all please remain standing for our invocation, Pastor Ron D. is here from Harvest Church to do that for us this evening. So, young ladies, we are ready for you up here.
Job, girls. Won't you just join me as we take a minute to pray? Father, we want to thank you that we can invite you into our meeting tonight. And Lord, as always, there are many things before the council that are important, that affect our city, the people of our city. So Lord, may you grant them ability to lead well, to give them wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of things that are before them. Lord, our prayer is that you would make our community really united. Lord, we have different opinions and ways of seeing things, but Lord, may you bring us together as a community and that you would just cause us all to really love each other. And so, Lord, we just want to commit this meeting this evening to you, we pray. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor Ron. Appreciate you being here this evening. And do we have a microphone for these young ladies? Okay, right behind you. And I don't know if all of you know the drill, but when you come and you do the flag salute for us, you get to tell us about some of the exciting things that Girl Scouts are doing. So what are you all doing that's really exciting and fun now?
I'm Ryan, and I'm in a play, The Wizard of Oz, and it's showing, and this is the last week in that Cuesta College.
Wow. Wizard of Oz. What position, what part do you play?
I'm a munchkin.
A munchkin. Okay. That works. Okay. What else?
I'm Claudia, and right now, well, I guess I am playing tennis, doing basketball, have clarinet.
And right now I am doing Girl Scouts, Destination Imagination, and I'm doing Ballet Folklorico, which is Mexican dancing.
Okay, well, I have a question, and anybody can answer it. Why should a girl your age in the community, why should they become involved with Girl Scouts? What would you say to them?
I would say that it's really fun. We do a lot of activities, and just get to know your community a little better.
Okay, anybody else want to answer? Go ahead.
In some of the activities, we get to help the environment. Like at our school, we planted a garden in the grotto, and sometimes we pick up pieces of trash on the beach for our activities, and it's really fun knowing that we're helping the community.
Okay, good. I think we have one more comment here.
I think it's good because we just end up helping our environment. I think it's fun because we get to know survival skills and we get to know the community better.
Okay, very good. Well, ladies, we enjoyed having you here and we really appreciate you helping us out with the flag salute. Will you come back and do it again for us? Okay, very good. Thank you so much for being here. Okay. Moving along to item 5, agenda review. Item 5A is closed session announcements. We have none this evening. 5B, move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Item 6A, we have a kind of a, a small error on the agenda. We were originally agendized to have an introduction and oath of office for police officers Sayland Elming and Tyler Kenny. And that was an error, and we will be having that special presentation on February the 11th. So that's going to be coming up at the first meeting in February. And that takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. And this is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on items that are not listed on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any action on matters not posted on the agenda. We would ask that you keep your comments brief, 3 minutes or less. Please address the council as one body. Once again, items not on the agenda this evening. And good evening, Otis.
Good evening. Otis Page, 606 Middle Street, Arroyo Grande. First order of business for me is to thank you, gentlemen, for your service to the community, and I most sincerely state that, including the distinguished staff, our mayor, the beautiful girl who's taking the notes, and the distinguished council, Tim. All right? The second item is that I'm making a request in light of the publicity that's taken place on the fire authority and the proposed tax increase to the property owners in Arroyo Grande. I request that this matter be agendized by the council so a public hearing can take place to discuss this thing in detail from the point of view of the property owners understanding exactly what's happening in your perspective. To not do that, in my judgment, means that you affirm the tax increase. And that may be the appropriate thing to do, but with respect to your wisdom on the matter, I've been advised by your distinguished city manager that Tony and you will meet with me and we'll discuss this further, but I want to make that formal request tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else who would like to come forward? Items not on this evening's agenda.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members and city staff. My name is Kevin J. McCarthy. I'm a physician assistant, and my wife and I have lived in the village for over 30 years, raised our family here. I and a number of... There's a lengthy list of problems and damage as a result of fracking, and at least as long a list of potential hazards specific to California from such an industrial process. Additionally, we're beginning to see the centrifugal effects of such frack production with the proposed 80 tank cars a day of volatile Bakken crude that may be coming to the Phillips 66 refinery in Napomo, each daily train carrying almost 2 million gallons of highly flammable product. Simply stated, on the face of it, to risk contaminating anyone's water supply for the sake of profit is criminal. And to abet the increased use of fossil fuels with our current understanding of our environmental predicament is, at the very least, irresponsible and short-sighted. We have a chance to limit such potential damage in our county, and I urge you to please consider asking the Board of Supervisors to prohibit such practices by placing our request on a near-future agenda. Lastly, I quote in part San Luis Obispo Mayor Jan Marks' letter, quote, "The adverse health and environmental effects of fracking activity in the unincorporated areas are potentially far-reaching as a result of our shared resources, water, air, roadways, and fault line. The City Council, on behalf of its citizens, calls on the County Board of Supervisors to take a proactive approach in adopting a countywide prohibition on fracking that protects the health and quality of life of all of our residents. Thank you. May I leave a letter of Mayor Marks's letter with the...
Would it be possible for you just to leave a copy for us?
Yes, that's what I was asking.
Okay. Would that be preferable?
And give it to Ms. Whitmore.
Sure. Let the clerk have it. Good. Thank you. Thank you for your comments.
So you guys don't have like a little light like they do at the school board? Okay. Good evening. My name is Piper Adelman, and I reside at 606 Cerro Vista Lane here in Arroyo Grande. I'm a parent of four children, an active community member, and a concerned citizen. And the first thing I wanted to say is thank you all for being here and for serving our community. I really appreciate it. The Arroyo Grande Clean Water Advocates, or AQUA, started several months ago, as Kevin just said, when a group of like-minded folks got together in a friend's living room here in town because we were concerned about this seemingly terrible practice we had been hearing about called hydraulic fracturing, better known as fracking. So we began a course of research trying to learn more about this topic, all the while knowing that there is no such thing as an impact-free energy source, and that we are not engineers or geologists, just people who want the cleanest possible water sources for our community and clean energy for our world. We're also probably like everyone in this room, not a group that's sitting around looking for something else to fill our time with. But we are individuals and parents deeply concerned about the potential impact and fallout from a practice about which little is still known, and that which is known seems to be not very well regulated at this point. So in the time we've been meeting, hydraulic fracturing has become increasingly a focal point and gaining lots of attention, much of it somewhat frightening and negative, and some of it related to the knowledge that the vast amounts of water that are required to successfully implement this process is something that we don't have here in California, as we're maybe historically going through one of the worst droughts in our history. So all of this has resulted in an even greater resolve on our part as citizens to continue to find ways to act as stewards and advocates for other members of our community, for families, and for the resources. So in this light, I am too here to respectfully request that the Arroyo Grande City Council draft a letter to the County Board of Supervisors, similar to that of your colleagues on the San Luis City Council, which makes official a request to have the Board of Supervisors adopt regulations that would prohibit the practice of hydraulic fracturing throughout San Luis Obispo County. Thank you for your consideration of this request.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
My name is Tom Sear, and I've lived in the Five Cities area since 1972, most of that in Arroyo Grande, and I currently live at 350 Acero Place. I was a teacher with Lucia Mar Unified School District for 20 years. Anyway, my talk is broken up into three different sections, fracking, drought, and leadership, and the title of it is Stand for a Ban. So oil companies are gearing up to come to visit the Monterey Shale because they know when they dig into that, those deep holes are going to find a lot of money. And the idea of their coming here makes me nervous because it uses a lot of water, fracking does. Just to give you an example of one well taking up between 1 million and 10 million gallons of water, fresh water, that is turned into a toxic sludge and never used for water again, to drink, that is. It also releases large amounts of methane, which is a dangerous and potent greenhouse cooking pads, and the water, the stuff that's taken out is brought back out, and each one of those fracking pads requires a road, and the trucks have to drive somewhere, and to get the 10 million gallons to and fro requires something like 200 trucks, tanker trucks full. Just think about that. So the California is also facing a huge water crisis, and the governor has already declared a drought emergency. And I think if I looked at this one map today of California, it looks like San Luis Obispo is one of the hardest hit area. The county is one of the hardest hit area in the state. It's pure red. And we haven't seen water here. I can remember just these little drippy things that come around every once in a while, but no real rain in a long, long time. The Paso Robles Airport reported only 15% of normal rain this year. They usually get 13-plus inches, and they only got 1.9 inches this year. SLO County reports that it had 2013 was the driest year on record. San Luis Obispo County was one of 27 counties in the state to be declared a natural disaster area by the U.S. Department of Agriculture due to the drought. Cambria is already on water restriction, going from 4,500 gallons per month per person down to 15. That's a huge drop. And Paso Robles has already, only by hearing people talk about this, 35 dry wells. The grape growers are nervous, if you read today's paper, about all of that. Corbett Canyon has potentially two dry wells that I've heard of, and Lopez Lake is down 57% full, or if you see it half empty, it's 43% empty. So these are important things. Well, my last issue is leadership.
If you could make it brief.
Okay, I will. I only have 2 points. We need effective leadership of the county's water supply, and we need to clear a decisive leadership effort. And that leadership starts with you all and then the county supervisors. It's hypocritical to ask the people in Cambria to cut their personal water by two-thirds while simultaneously planning to allow hydraulic fracturing companies to come to consume and contaminate massive amounts of county water. I'm here to ask you to please make a positive contribution to the wise leadership of our county, by replicating what the city of SLO has already done by writing a letter to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors requesting that they prohibit hydraulic fracturing well stimulation within our entire county. In other words, I'm asking you to be wise leaders and please stand for a ban. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else who would like to come forward? Last chance. Okay. We're going to close community comments and suggestions, and we're going to move on to item 8, which is our consent agenda. The consent agenda is normally a group of items that the council approves in one action, unless there is an item on the consent agenda that a member of the council would like to pull for further clarification, further discussion, or an independent action. This is also an opportunity for members of the public to come forward on any of the items on consent. And if you're following along on this evening's agenda, we're going to be addressing consent items 8A through 8E. And so at this time, what I'd like to do is have you refer to the consent agenda, and if there's anyone in the audience that would like to come forward and comment on any of those items, this would be your opportunity. Once again, 3 minutes or less, please address the council as one body. Anyone who would like to come forward on consent? Okay, seeing no one, we will close public comment on the consent agenda. Bring this back to the council. What is the will of the council this evening? Any items to pull? Okay, we have no items to pull this evening. I will entertain a motion.
I would move for approval of 8A through 8E.
8E, all right. We have a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
And a second. Discussion? Hearing none, anything to read in there this evening, Tim?
Yes, indeed, Mr. Mayor. Item 8E is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande prohibiting dogs from the Soto Sports Complex.
Okay, thank you very much. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay, item 9 is public hearings. We do have a lineup of them this evening. We have 3 public hearings. The first is 9A. This is a continued consideration of a continual use permit, case number 13-003, Farmers Market in the Village. And good evening, Kelly and Teresa.
Yes, good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. The purpose of this conditional use permit is to formally approve and in Olahan Alley. Currently, the farmers market occurs every Saturday from noon to 2:30, with through traffic and parking closed off from 8 a.m. to 3 o'clock p.m. There are 32 produce vendor spaces available that average 12 feet by 25 feet in size, and then run along each side of the parking area with a pedestrian aisle down the center that measures between 10 feet and 20 feet in width. The Village Improvement Association, their designated area, has 7 stalls for prepared food and craft vendors. The market area also encompasses Centennial Square Park and the gazebo. And then this slide just shows how the booths are generally laid out. When considering this project, the Staff Advisory Committee brought up issues of adequate traffic control, waste management, emergency access, permit revocation, and adherence to county health standards. Conditions of approval were then included in the resolution to address staff's concerns, including revocation of the permit at any time at the city's discretion, any change in operator, the farmer's market requires city approval, providing an insurance policy naming the city as additionally insured, compliance with all county health department rules and regulations, periodic inspections for vendors selling prepared food, providing an adequate aisle width of 12 feet to accommodate emergency vehicle access, providing traffic control, and then proper trash disposal. Regarding the traffic control, safety cones are currently used to discourage through traffic, but this really hasn't been working very well. The condition specifically reads that the applicant shall work with the city to provide adequate traffic control, such as removable bollards at the 2 access points, which are located at Short Street and Mason Street. It is assumed that the cost of adding removable bollards is about $3,000, and it is expected that the cost would be shared between the city, the Village Improvement Association, and the Harvest Festival Association, since they all use this area for various community events. Several issues were raised when this project was first presented last November, including whether a business license should be required for vendors, other city-related fees, and adherence to the buy local policy. Regarding the first issue, the city currently does not require a business license for individual vendors, although the San Luis Obispo County Farmers Market Association has had an umbrella business license for this purpose since 1980. Staff has included a condition that requires individual vendors to obtain a city business license prior to selling produce or prepared food and crafts at the market. The issue of whether a fee should be charged by the city for the farmers market to use city property was also brought up. The applicant provided a list of farmers markets located within the county on both private and public property and what fees are imposed. It is clear that most markets do not charge a fee. Of the 19 farmers markets listed, 14 do not charge a fee for the use of private or public property. Because the farmers market provides many benefits to the city, and to be consistent with practices of other municipalities within the county, staff does not recommend charging a fee for use of city property. I should also note that the city does not provide any staff time to assist with the market, and therefore there are no direct city costs. Consistency with the farmers market with the county's buy local policy was originally recommended as a condition of approval last November. This policy would require preference to vendors that provide locally farmed produce. This has many benefits, including provision of fresher produce, support sustainability of local agriculture, and reduction of transportation emissions. However, after discussing the issue further with the Farmers Market Association, staff recommended taking this condition out since it would limit the variety of produce offered and potentially weaken the overall success of the market. There are many types of produce that simply aren't grown locally, but as it stands now, the majority of vendors are from San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties. The rest are from Fresno, Kings, and Tulare counties. Due to the recent correspondence received on this issue, staff recommends that a revised condition be added, which the applicant is in support of. The new condition reads, and you can see it on the screen, when filling a vacancy in the certified farmer's portion of the market for a specified type of produce, farmers from San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties will have priority over those from other areas on parking, although this does not appear to be the overall consensus of village businesses. This issue was looked at in 2010 when council was considering new development and a one-way access on Short Street. Council analyzed five other locations, including the western portion of Olihan Alley, Heritage Square Park, La Pointe Street parking lot, the Car Corral, and Bridge Street. The leading options considered were Heritage Square Park and the La Pointe Street parking area. Heritage Square Park was rejected due to access issues, conflicts with other activities, and loading and unloading issues. The La Pointe Street parking lot was considered undesirable because it is terraced, which makes it difficult for people with disabilities. It's not readily visible and would be in an inferior location because it does not provide the ambiance of the creek as the current location does. It's important to note that the current market is an effective attraction for weekend tourists, which staff believes would be decreased substantially if it was moved to the La Pointe Street parking area. Based on this review, council determined that the current site retained the preferred location. Remains the preferred location. As mentioned in the staff report, there are many advantages to operating the farmers market at its current location with specific conditions and city controls. It is well attended on a weekly basis, draws a large number of both local residents and tourists to the village, creates an active and vibrant environment on Saturdays in the village, supports local agricultural general plan policies, supports local VIA efforts, and has numerous local economic and environmental benefits. So, in conclusion, the Planning Commission has determined that the project is exempt under CEQA, is consistent with the city's general plan policy to support regular farmers markets, and recommends that council adopt a resolution to approve and entitle the existing farmers market in the village. Staff also recommends that business licenses be required by all vendors, that non-farmer booths be local vendors, and that the revised by local condition be added for farmers booths. And as alternatives, council could modify and adopt a resolution approving the CUP, include a condition restricting non-farmer booths to locally produced items and grandfather existing booths, or you could do it and not grandfather in existing booths, consider charging a fee, consider an alternative location, then of course do not adopt the resolution and direct staff to return with appropriate findings for denial or just provide other direction to staff. So that concludes my staff report. I'd be happy to answer questions.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Kelly? Okay, why don't we start on my far right with Councilmember Costello and then Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Kelly, go back a few slides. There was something that talked about the... Yeah, right there, that one. It talks about the criteria from the San Luis Obispo County Farmers Market Association requirements for volume, quality, variety, and participation. What are those criteria? Do we know?
I would defer that to the applicant.
Okay. And another issue that's been raised is the custodial services for the bathroom that go on. I'm just wondering... have we figured out what a real cost of that is that's contributable to the farmers market activity?
Boy,
I mean, is it a significant cost at all?
I don't have the cost. We recently began contracting out custodial on our public restrooms, as you recall. I don't see there'd be any additional cost. Their contract specifies that they have the bathrooms prepared for Saturday activities. There's a lot of people in that area that use that bathroom anyways. We have contacted them to make sure, you know, we're doing appropriate checks to make sure it's clean when necessary, but I don't really see any cost specifically directly associated with the farmer's market.
Okay, very good. And then somewhere in here I saw some comments that the FMA provides $1 million insurance, but it's not listed as an organization operating the agricultural part of the farmer's market. Is there a nexus here in terms of the insurance requirements? Do we need to have them in? Can they be left out? What do we see with that issue?
Did you, you are referring to correspondence received?
I believe so, yes.
We'll have to look at that correspondence.
We determined that it is appropriate under our normal guidelines for requiring business license.
In addition to the one they already really have?
Well, the one they have is just for the overall market. Each of the vendors is a standalone business, so they should be required to have their own business license. Not undifferent from a beauty salon where individual contractors within the salon, stylists, if they are under contract rather than being an employee of the business, each of them require a business license also.
Okay, and then my last question is, does the resolution before us have the amendments and modifications that you requested, or is it the one that was brought forward from Planning Commissioner?
The resolution has been amended to include several special conditions. So what you have before you in the packet does not include the revision that's on the screen. That would need to be added if you so chose to include that. It does have in here that individual vendors shall obtain the business license and that non-farmer vendors shall be restricted to those from San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties. So those items were not in the original resolution that went to the Planning Commission.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Councilmember Barnage, question?
Yes, I have one. Thank you. Kelly, do you know the two non-local booths the VIA has, do you know what they're selling and where they're from?
I have a list of all the vendors for the produce portion
right.
of it. I don't have a list for the VIA.
Okay.
I haven't seen a list. I don't know if anybody else has seen a list. But
well, I think that Bob maybe sent me one, but I don't know if it was noted who wasn't local. Can't remember.
Yes, there's a list of vendors, and there is one vendor that was not considered a local vendor on that list.
Let me just clarify that. It was my understanding, after talking to Bob, there was no all the vendors were local vendors, but there was two selling products that were not produced locally. That's my understanding.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
That is why the condition that's been recommended by staff specifies that all the non-farmer vendors will be local, because that it does not conflict with their current operation. The question is, what we didn't recommend and include in the conditions was whether you want it to be locally produced items.
Okay.
And that is the part where Bob Lund had asked if we do that, he'd like to grandfather in the two that are currently operating.
Okay, so how I understand it is everyone's local that sells for those VIA booths. There's just two booths that have products that are from outside the area.
That's why the way it was
okay.
explained to me.
Okay, thank you.
I did have a question. This is also from some of the correspondents. Is in our proposal, is there anything that would be a requirement that the farmers do identify whether they are locally produced and whether they're organic farmers or not? Is there anything in here that there's a requirement that they actually identify themselves as local and whether they're organic or not?
We had that in the original resolution that went to you in November. It's not proposed in the current condition. If you wanted to put that in, it probably would want to have a little bit of discussion with the applicant.
Thank you. That's my main question.
Okay. Well, we're about to open the general public hearing portion of this item, but before we do that, I would first of all like to invite, if there's a spokesperson here from the San Luis Obispo Farmers Market Association, I suspect the council may have a few more questions. So I'd like to offer you first opportunity at the podium, and then also I see a couple of our local representatives from the VIA. The same would apply if you have anything you'd like to add to the staff report. We may have a few questions for the VIA as well. So, sir, please come forward.
So my name is Peter Janke. I'm the administrator of the San Luis Obispo County Farmers Market Association. Would you like my address or... Okay. So my residence is 635 Buckley Road, San Luis Obispo.
Farmers Market Association. Who are your members?
Okay. Okay. So these are. So the San Luis Obispo County Farmers Market Association is a mutual benefit not-for-profit corporation. They were established in the, I believe, 1980 as a corporation. We have a 7-member board. Each of them, they're required to be actually farmers with certified producer certificates. Seven-member board, they have 3-year staggering terms, and we meet generally quarterly, and now with the business activity going, we actually have business meetings semi-quarterly as well. So I can give you the names of all of them if you like.
Don't need the names. Farmers?
Oh, yes. Well, actually, every one of them are local farmers. In the definition of within the city limit, within the Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo County limits.
And what are your standards or your requirements for volume, quality, variety, and participation?
Okay, well, it's in part the standards here are intended to make the market vibrant, attractive, where people come and enjoy the products that they have and go home happy. Okay, so the first one, volume. So what we require is that more than bringing a basket or two, say, of strawberries, we require that that person who becomes part of that farmer's part of the farmer's market are able to meet consumer demand. Okay, so that is the first part. So usually we would have several people with the same product line, so collectively to meet product demand. So if a person has just one tree, for example, that really wouldn't meet our requirements, okay, for volume. The second one has to do with the quality, and there are state standards, and so what they are for farmers markets in general is field run or better. And so we're always looking for the better quality. And so the quality has, I guess, a number of different aspects to it. So certainly it is going to be tree ripened or vine ripened. It's going to have good flavor. It's going to be, let's see, what else did I write down here? Usually when I'm sitting over a cup of coffee, I can rattle it off. When I'm sitting in front of a bunch of people, okay, so that the taste is good. So in other words, it meets customer appeal. So we don't want to have sour oranges, for example, so they all have to be something that meets the public expectations. Okay. The other one, variety. This is quite variable. There are some people who... some of our farmers that have sort of a variety of products. So, for example, we have some that have a combination of carrots and celery and strawberries and the like. So this is for, say, that category. But what we also pride ourselves in doing is having people who have just a single product. So like just asparagus or just pomegranates. And so variety here, I guess, is going to depend upon the item that you look at. So peaches would be a good example, I would think, because peaches, there are any given peach variety is going to be something where it's harvestable usually for maybe 3 to 4 weeks, and that's it. So what they are different varieties of, say, stone fruits that allow one to go through the entire summer season and still have high quality and meeting public consumer demand. The last one was
participation.
Okay, that's really a critical one. The customer expects that if they bought something from somebody 1 week, that that person is going to be there the next week. So what we term participation is consistently weekly participation. So certainly there are times when a person can't make it, but they have to be consistent week to week to week, unless there are reasons, car breaks down, illness in the family, those types of things. Other than that, they're expected to be there weekly.
Okay, thank you. And then I believe the letter I'm referring to came from you when you talk about the requirement for the FMA to provide the insurance policy.
Oh,
but you're not listed as the operator of the farmers market. Is that a deal breaker for you?
I guess I'm not.
We had preferred having one applicant, so we'd have one party that's responsible and one party that the city can go to anytime there's an issue we need to address. But yeah, within the conditions, the Farmers Market Association is listed, identified that they will be the operator of the certified farmers market portion of the farmers market. So they are identified as the operator of the farmers.
Thank you very much.
Are there other questions for Mr. Jenke?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. What happens, I see the list of the products that are sold there, Peter, and it, you know, some people have berries, other people have berries. If someone new wants to join the market and there is space available, what if they have the same items that other people are selling? How do you work that out?
Right. We've been in business essentially for 35 years, since 1978, and we realize and find important that there be competition amongst a variety of products. But one can get to a point where you have too much of that given product, and very important for us is to maintain a strong farmers market, not only for consumer demand, but also for the small family farmer. So we have to provide a productive marketplace for that. So if we already have, say, 7 people with strawberries, we will not let another person in with strawberries.
Okay. And then, let's see. You and I talked about the Embassy Suites Farmers Market.
Yes.
But I was talking about the my need or want for organic produce. Mm-hmm. And you said that the Embassy Suites has, how much is organic at that market?
Right off the top of my head, I can figure we probably have 7 people who are certified organic.
Okay. And if they're not certified, is there a designation? I know at this farmer's market you see signs that say no pesticides,
right.
But that's sort of a, you know, I don't know how much credibility, just because I don't know who checks on that. But is there a different designation at the Embassy Suites Farmer's Market that has no pesticides, or it's just certified organic and then conventional?
I think by state laws is that no one's allowed to use the term organic,
yeah,
unless they are certified for that.
Okay, and there's 7.
So,
you said?
But the, and I believe that there are 7.
Okay.
I can certainly get you the detailed list. Okay, so with the others, and I realize is that when somebody says something, I don't spray my product. That's a how do you verify that? How do you validate? How do you know that person actually did not spray something? And so in part, we have in the past, if we had any inkling or any idea or some kind of red flag that came up, this is that this was product was sprayed, we have several ways in which we can address that. And one is that any farmer who sells to the public is required to have a pesticide use permit and to register every time they, before, during, and after the. So we would be able to find a track record to determine whether or not that person was in fact spraying based on that. The other is that we've known the farmers, many of them, for 30 years, and we've come to know them and begin to develop, I would say, a trust, if you will, with them. Certainly that whenever somebody, if anybody comes up and asks us, you know, well, how do you know? And so if there's any question at all that we can't answer, we will do the paperwork to try to find out what we can about that. We had one time looked into the idea of actually testing samples, you know, of just randomly go through and check on samples. But the cost to check for those samples is like about $600 a sample, and our organization really couldn't afford to do that. So some of the other types of ways in which the consumer, in fact, I think one of the great things about farmers markets is that people develop a rapport with their individual farmer. And so they can go up and they can ask them any questions. When was it grown? Where was it grown? How was it produced? And how do I know that there wasn't a pesticide use on it? And I think one of the best examples I've seen is when I was walking by and a customer was at the table and they said, you know, your broccoli looks so beautiful. How is it possible that you didn't spray? And so I thought it was very well answered by the farmer broke open the head of broccoli and says, you see those little things in there? That's how you know it wasn't sprayed. And so these are the, unfortunately, this is the way we do have to section, have a producer's certificate. And that producer's certificate is obtained by the County Agricultural Commissioner's Office. So they go through, and it's their mandate by state law that they inspect at least once a year everybody's production to validate is that the product that is listed on their producer certificate is of their own production. And we also, I have a tendency to start going into what people call TMI, too much information. But certification means is that nobody can sell at the within the certified farmer's market unless they have that producer certificate from the county of origin.
So they can't be a reseller?
Oh, in fact, if we ever, we have in the past, shall we say, terminated the membership of people precipitously if we can find out with reasonable grounds that the person was cheating. That's our big no-no. Yeah.
The second question I had is related to this proposed condition. What kind of turnover have you had at the Arroyo Grande market?
Well, we have very little turnover, and this is, I guess, what comes with what we're talking about, this coevolution of farmers and the people that come to the farmers' markets. And so we have people who have been with us for 30 years, and not too, and like, I was just going to bring up the Rigettis. They've been with us since 1978, for example. We do have turnover, but it's very slight. And just recently, we had turnover of a person, not of their own, in other words, had a stroke and had to drop out. And so that left a vacancy. And so there is turnover, but it's very slow.
So, for instance, last year, how much turnover did you have? How many of these slots turned over?
I think we have, for our organization as a whole,
for the Arroyo Grande market.
For the Arroyo Grande, I would say maybe three, or two or three, right?
And the last question is my question related to the call labeling that the farmers identify that they're local, and I assume if they are organic, they would identify already that they're organic farmers.
If they're organic, they're required to have a plaque order, some other obvious sign that's visible from the producer's table. So it's maybe on the back of their vehicle, or it's on their thing, or it's on within a shall I say, an envelope hanging available for inspection that they have their certification. So that's for organic.
Okay. And what about the identification for
the identification? I guess what we look at here is that several things. One is that there is that dynamics between the farmers' markets and the customers. And it's so often where people will come up and say, oh, where's your farm? And so what we've seen is that there's really no need to post anything. And if what we looked at is that what would be the reason for doing that is only for the purpose of these are local people, those aren't. And with the idea of one perhaps being less favored, if you will, because of the requirement of the sign. We look at it as it's free, and anybody wants to ask a question, and we see this happen regularly where people ask where their farm is and other details.
So it's basically buyer beware.
Pardon?
So it's basically buyer beware. It's,
I hate to use that kind of comment because that the buyer, if they're not sure, they certainly are able to ask. And so, and they can, if they don't want to confront the man, they don't want to confront the person, they can go to the manager who is there during the entire time and ask, where's that guy growing his product? Or if they want to phone me, our office, they have no problems in asking where that product came from.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Well, I have a couple of follow-up questions in the same general area as Council Member Costello's question. I have to come back to the criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of very briefly walk me through that process? Is when we look at volume, quality, variety, and participation, are those things that, for example, if I wanted to apply, do I attest to those things on an application form? Do I promise that that's what I'm going to do? Or is that something that you or some other representative of the Farmers Market Association, excuse me, would continue to verify or validate through actual practice where you have a booth on the ground? Is there monitoring to ensure these things?
Okay, so you had that has a bunch of parts. I'll try not to, if I skip part of it. So
let me hone in on one example.
Right.
You mentioned
what I take right away is that there's somebody like Mr. Sparks who brings in tomatoes. Lots of times he brings in just a few, but during the peak of the season, he's bringing in quite a bit. And so also is that we don't expect that one farmer would be able to meet the consumer demand for the entire market. And so when we start to see that there is more demand for what the production can be, then we will likely recruit for that specifically. So the people who just want to come in and sell a basket and then leave, and they that's not the kind of, shall we say, thing that we would like to see. We would like to see that the people who come throughout the different parts of the market are able to find the kinds of products that they want. So with the individual that might have a little bit limited at one particular time in the season, they do have a much bigger part in the other time of the season. So that's the way. I'm not sure I'm answering the question to your satisfaction, but is there something else that I can perhaps...
I understand what you're saying, Dan. So I'm assuming that you might also walk through the market and... taste the produce from time to time? Do you do that?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there are times when we've gone through, and this maybe is a number of years ago, when there were some really hard freezes in the valley, and so some of the people were bringing oranges, and so we went through there, and we selected out like five or six different oranges, cut them in half, and if there was a few that were like that, if there were a certain percentage, and we said... pack it up. Okay. And so quality is something that's important for us. The people can't bring junk, so to speak, because what we want to see is that we're proud of what we bring, and we want to see the best products brought. And so you'll see that also the farmers that have been with us for a number of years, they've learned that people want quality.
Okay. And thank you. Okay. Okay, I think that's enough for now, but we may ask you to come back again before the evening is over.
Okay, and okay. I'd be more than happy to come back.
Okay, good, thank you. Anyone from the VIA? Verena, any comments? Come on up.
Hello, my name is Verena Meyer, and I own Verena's Go Gourmet, 127 East Branch Street. And I'm also the chairperson of the VIA board. And I know that there's a portion of the market that is organized by the VIA, so to speak. That is not the certified portion. And I just want to say, as a merchant, and that the farmers market is very essential to have in the Rio Grande, and I'm happy to see that we're continuing to have the market. I think I'm very happy with the proposed changes, that sometimes we have to look at what's been going on and make some changes, and I like the idea of the changes and that we can go a little bit more local if possible. And personally, as far as the signage, we were talking about some signage. I would like to see a little bit more signage, maybe even on the VIA side, as far as GMO products or non-GMO products, whether it's organic or not organic. It's kind of a minor detail. But I want to say that the VIA will be more than happy to comply with all the proposed items that I've seen tonight, and that the farmers market has to be in Rio Grande. It just is so, I cannot stress how important it is to all the merchants in the village. And I've known, for example, when we've had the market in a different space, I've gotten a lot less customers in my business, and it really impacts the businesses. So I'm very happy to see that we're going to continue on. So thank you. If anyone has any questions for me. Oh, good. Okay. Thank
Not
you very
now,
much.
But maybe later.
Okay, okay. Great. Thanks Thank so much.
Okay, we're going to now open the general public comment portion of this public hearing. And once again, we would like to remind you to try and keep your comments brief, 3 minutes or less. Please address the council as one body. Anyone who would like to come forward for our general public hearing? No one?
Good evening. My name is April McLaughlin, and I'm an Arroyo Grande resident. I live at 333 Pine Tree Lane. That's not made up, I promise. And I would like to address just a few items. I'm so pleased tonight that you guys are is suspended within the state of California, and they're not even legally allowed to operate, just so you know that. There's jelly that is sold that's called Aloha from Oregon, and their name is where they're from, Oregon, sold in our local farmers market. So I'd be curious to know which two vendors are selling our non-local stuff, because I that's not true. There's product that is being sold by four vendors at a minimum that are not local. So that's the main thing I would like you to think about. The certified side of the farmers market is a great market in comparison to, you know, other markets. I don't want to name names, but in comparison to other markets, I think signage is important. I don't know why they would balk at educating the consumer of where the product comes from. If I want to adhere to a buy local policy that our own city, you know, created, why don't I get to know? I mean, why doesn't there a sign? You know, that, it's not too much to ask. You know, it's required to have a sign of, you know, where the food comes in my grocery store. Why couldn't I know where the food comes at the market? Again, that's not too much to ask. And if a Fresno farmer makes better produce at the market, then I have the ability to buy that if I wish. But I don't get to make an educated vote with my dollars if they refuse to put up signs. The insurance, I think that they should be named additional. You guys should be named additional insured. I don't see why that should be a problem. The rent of space is something that I wonder that you guys would think about more closely. You're told that there are 19 farmers markets in our community, and there are. But of that, you can only be a nonprofit, a certified producer, or a government agency to run a farmers market. So the ones that aren't paying rent, either they operate on the land that they're in charge of, or their government, or their chambers of commerce. This market is not a chamber of commerce. This market is in its own entity. It can't be a corporation because that's not allowed to run a certified farmers market. But they're the next step down. They're a 501c6. But the chambers are running the markets to promote the cities. This market isn't running a market to promote you. It's its own business. If the chamber ran it, I could understand not charging a rent. And as you know now, that Avila is being charged. Various county-run markets that are on the county land is being charged. It's not too much to ask. It's my taxpayer dollars that go towards the city of Arroyo Grande. Are you in the business of a farmer's market, or are they in the business of a farmer's market? I would like you to ask yourself. When farmers are in the farmer's market and they're selling their particular item that is unique to them and not sold, not grown here locally, when that season runs out for them, then what are they selling? Because they're still taking space at that market. And they'd like you to believe that it's one vendor, but this market operation is five locations. So one vendor can take five spaces every single week, times eight of them. So that's something to think about. Again, if there was at least labeled that, we could make a decision of where those vendors come from. I think that's pretty much it. Again, I'm really pleased with the progress you guys have made and the education you've gotten and what the staff has recommended so far. But in terms of location, Councilmember Costello at the last meeting personally said out loud and requested that the staff come back with a different, with more information, because this information they provided originally was based from 2010. They didn't. They've given you no other location information. They made no additional studies at all. So whatever was applicable in 2010, it's now 2014. The community's changed. The finances have changed for people. You've gotten letter after letter from local businesses that are negatively impacted by this farmer's market. You haven't gotten the same amount of letters from businesses that are positively impacted. So that's something to think about. And I don't know why that the location at Wesley and Larchmont, it's a very large, very nice parking lot. Why that's not on the short list of a location potential for the market? You can see it from the main street. It's got plenty of space. It's a nice parking lot. And I think it was also Council Member Costello that said, the market's a destination. Wherever it goes, the people will go to it. The market on Grand Avenue has moved from Kmart to where it is now. Markets can move. They're fluid. That's the benefit of a non-brick-and-mortar location. So to tie it to brick-and-mortar rules doesn't seem as fair. But, again, I thank you for your time. I'm really pleased tonight. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else who would like to come forward? Last chance. Okay. We're going to close the public hearing portion of 9A. And we're going to bring this back to the council, and we're going to start on my left with Councilmember Barnidge.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So I'll take the items that have come up one at a time. The parking for the farmers market, I personally have never had an issue parking. Granted, I do tend to come down Mason and park on this side of business to the village. I think people come down, they go to the market, they go to lunch at Gina's, they go get a cup of coffee, they buy a greeting card. I'm definitely in favor of just keeping it right where it is. The VIA booths, I'm glad that was brought to our attention. I had no idea that there were products that were not made locally. Going forward, I appreciate the alternative number five that staff has in the staff report that says that we include a condition restricting non-farmer booths to locally produced items and do not grandfather existing booths. I first was okay with grandfathering the existing booths, and I'm not really sure it's sort of conflicting how many are there that have local items. But to go to a farmer's market in a small town like Arroyo Grande and go and buy jelly or pickles or whatever, and someone is selling them that's local, and that's great, but they're from out of the area, that's not unique. That's like a supermarket, and we can get that anywhere, and that's not something I think that is a draw. I think it's sort of a turnoff. So I'm not in favor of grandfathering the two in, or the how many. And the buying local, I sort of have gone back and forth on this. I do appreciate the variety, and I understand that we can't get oranges here when we can get good oranges in Fresno, and I appreciate that, but I do think there needs to be a little more movement in the farmers market. If we have someone that is, we had received a letter from someone who's right around the corner that could walk to farmers market, I think, that's an organic farmer, and there at what we have been told, where there was a waiting list and there was no room for them to come and sell. And for them to not be able to sell at the market that's in their hometown, and they're selling organic produce, which we don't have a lot at the market. We rarely have organic produce at our market. I would rather buy from them than buy from the person from Fresno that's selling the oranges. Even though they've been there a long time, I understand that the Farmers Market Association has a certain loyalty because they've been there and they know them. I understand that, but at the same time, I think that we need to be a little more open to having people, if we have some good people come in that are selling things that we don't normally have, like organic produce, we need to be able to have them have a location or at least be considered. Having to wait 2 or 3 years for them to come back, I don't think that's right. And I personally, I love the farmers market. I go down there when the apple man from Paso is selling his organic apples. But other than that, we don't have any organic produce, and I'm really hoping that because we've opened this up, we can look really hard at having some organic produce because other farmers markets have organic produce, and we're sort of missing out. And so those are my comments. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think this falls under the category, if it's not broken, don't try to fix it. Farmers market has been highly successful. I know there's been some conflicts that have come up, and that's partially why we're discussing it today. But overall, I don't think parking is an issue. I think it does bring foot traffic into the village. I can attest to that because I live in the village and I see it on a regular basis. The idea of having local and organic items is good as long as we have enough vendors. And I think Councilman Costello brought that issue up at one of our previous meetings. And it was determined, at least at that last meeting, that there hadn't been anybody really left out that wanted to be there. So I'm not sure if that's an issue or not, but I understand the concern, but based on his question, it seemed like that wasn't a huge issue. So I'm ready to move forward with the modifications as requested by staff. I'm glad we took time to have a public hearing on the issue because it always helps to bring things out and in the open and talk about them on occasion. But again, I think this is one of those items that's proved to be highly successful, and to tinker with it too much, I don't think is necessary. So those are my comments, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, I want to start with the five conditional use permit findings, and it seems like we do meet them all. So that issue is clear cut for me, that conditional use permit is appropriate in this situation. Then it comes down to just some of the details here. I think that it was earlier mentioned that I talked about the destination, and I think the village is the destination. The fact that the farmers market is in the village, people are coming for both. They're coming for the farmers market, and they're coming because it is the village. I think there's a symbiotic relationship here to the local businesses, if possible. I completely support the new language for the non-agricultural vendors in here. And I'm not sure about the grandfathering in or not. It sounds like we've got some unclear information here about how many people really are non-local vendors or whether the products are local. I suppose if a vendor is local and they're a member of this community, that makes them local. So I'm not sure that I'd want to exclude
a local vendor that may be selling a product that's coming from somewhere else. But I'm in favor of keeping the farmers market in its present location. I don't think we need to charge a fee. Parking, I think we can live with. And I would like to see a language included that says that any openings that come up for the agricultural booths, preference goes to local vendors first.
Okay. And Mayor Pro Tem?
I guess I'll start with the general. I do think the farmers market is a certainly a key component of not only the village but of sort of the whole Arroyo Grande mystique, I'll call it. We do support agriculture, and for us not to have a farmers market in our community, I think would certainly be a loss. I do think that the point was made that they don't promote the community directly, but I do think that they do promote the community indirectly. Clearly, the fact that they attract people to the village is a promotion for not just the village of Arroyo Grande, but for Arroyo Grande overall. So I think they fulfill that role where I feel they're providing certainly more service than they're costing us. So I'm not inclined to charge a fee. In fact, I came in tonight prepared to not be in favor of the business license, but I do see the consistency issue that they are regular vendors, which is kind of good and bad, which I'll get to in a minute. But I do see for consistency that's probably something that I would support. So I think that the question that the market is by definition a destination market. You can't say that we're attracting tourists to the other or even locals to the market and then deny that it's a destination market. I do think we could move it within the village somewhere and with minimal impact to the number of people who actually come to the market. People would still come to the market. They would still come to the village. They would still spill out into other businesses. We didn't get enough information tonight for me to say that I really think there's another location that really would be better, that would still be in the village. I personally thought we could take a better look at the La Pointe parking lot. I do think the ADA issue is something there, but I don't think that the visibility issue is an issue at all, and I don't think that the ambiance issue is really an issue, that in fact the market works. In fact, if you looked at the statistics that the market gave us, I think the most successful market is the one that's in the parking lot up by Home Buffet, up in the Embassy Suites in that area, and that has, I'm going to say, zero ambiance. So, I'll probably hear from San Luis people on that. But it is by far the most successful market. It's a Saturday. It's big. It's organic, unlike ours. So I think that that we really should take a look at. There is room for change. I think the comment was made, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But a more modern one is, if you don't innovate, you die. So I do think we do want to look at in the long run, that just because people have been doing it this way for 20 years, that doesn't mean that's what we should, the way that it should continue to operate. So I do think that I'm prepared tonight to move forward with it pretty much as it is. I do think that based on the letters that we got from people who say that they did want to buy local, I don't think it's unreasonable that we have the farmers identify where they're from. I'm not saying you put up one that says I'm a local and one that says I'm not. I'm saying you just put up where your farm's located. San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, Fresno, wherever your county is. And I don't think that's an unreasonable expectation for the people who are, in fact, coming to this market. And I don't think it creates an outrageous competitive disadvantage that should send people away. I'm certainly in favor of the variety. I do think that we do have enough local participation here that, in fact, variety is a key issue. That I share that with the farmers market, that is something that they do need to work at maintaining. I'm in favor of the alternative with replacing certified marks as they turn over, but I'll just point out how slow they turn over. 5 years from now, a quarter of the market would have turned over if it's one or two a year. So I'm not sure how impactful that is, but certainly that's a start. But I do think I'd like for us to do this tonight and then take a look at it in a year. That there was no problem with turnover in the unit because there was space available, that nobody was being turned away. Well, people are clearly being turned away if there's a waiting list. So I'm in favor of moving forward tonight, again, alternative five, but I'd like to include that we would require that the farmers identify what county they're from. And I think they would identify if they're organic. I kind of threw that out there, but now I realize that something they would do automatically. But I would like to see them identify what county they're from as well. Thank you.
Okay. Well, similarly to my colleagues, I'll take one issue at a time. And first of all, I personally like the current location. I think the only issue I have with it is that working with Arroyo Grande and Bloom on Saturday mornings, you know, we're down there, and they close off that area at 8 o'clock. And it's very difficult to pass through there. I understand why you do it, because, number one, you're trying to restrict cars from parking in there, recognizing that farmers market is going to commence at noon. And secondly, you want to try and get the cars that are already parked in there out of there before the activity begins. but in terms of the overall location, I think folks are used to seeing it there. It's there for a short period of time. I don't feel that it has that negative of an impact on our local businesses. I personally like the dynamic of having folks park in our newer parking lot off of LaPointe Street and walking to Farmers Market. It's why we enhance the crosswalks. While they are moving in that direction and returning to their cars, they've got to pass the deli, the Chocolate Sheep. They'll drift a little bit west and go to Verena's. They'll pass by Gina's and Rooster Creek and every other business in proximity. That's what we want them to do. So the village was set up conceptually as a pedestrian-friendly environment. That's what we continue to try and promote, and I think Farmers Market helps us do that in many ways. So I'm okay with the parking issue and the location issue. as far as the buy local, I support what staff is proposing. I like the idea of the signage, as has been mentioned. I don't think it's an imposition at all for there to be more clear signage in terms of informing the buying public. I think it's much more of a courtesy. It gives people a conscious choice as to whether or not they want to buy a particular product from in-county or out-of-county. The other thing that, and I've sort of seen this happen, and we have to be ready for it, but it comes back to the criteria, particularly variety and quality. You know, I've seen people that will shop around. I shop around to the various booths, and wherever I can, I will buy local. But if the presentation of out-of-county produce attracts more buyers to that location, they're going to buy that product. So I think adherence to that, I'm glad there is some quality control and that Mr. Janke mentioned, and that we try and bring not only the out-of-county but the local farmers up to that standard. That evens the playing field. So I'm glad that criteria is there. But people are going to shop for the best quality and the best variety. And sometimes in their own conscious mind, where it was grown sort of plays, you know, second in their decision-making process. As far as the prepared foods, and this comes back to the VIA, I think the comments have already been made. In a perfect world, my preference would be if we had a local business person who was selling local prepared products. That's who I would want to see in our farmers market. So the question is, do we have a local business person that wants to step up and vend hummus or ravioli or salsa or whatever the case may be? If those opportunities exist, I would like to see the VIA go out and try and attract them. If they don't exist, then we come back to the whole issue of how do we make farmers market whole? How do we make it an attraction? How do we offer variety? And if it means that we have to use a local business person who does vend products that were made elsewhere, that's a choice that we have to make. If there's no opportunity for a local product to be vended, that as well.
Question, Mr. Mayor? Dealing directly with that.
Can I finish?
Certainly, but I do have a question for you.
Okay. So, so with that clarification, I think, as has been already stated, I would be comfortable moving forward with the rest of the staff's recommendation. So, now you have a question.
If we do go with the only local non-ag vendors, and there are only four that come forward, and we have, what, eight booths? Do we have four empty booths? How would we affect this change?
No, I'm saying at least we can look. This gives us an opportunity to look. And if we can't determine that we have those opportunities, then obviously we need to fill the booths.
If I can comment, I think the point is it's locals first get the first opportunity. If in fact there are no locals that come forward, then the VIA, the way I'm hearing it, the VIA would move forward.
Very good.
So they get the first spot.
Thank you.
And yep. And if nobody's grandfathered in, then it's something they probably have to relook at every year.
And without the grandfathering, those same booths may well come back.
Yeah.
Because the opportunity is not there for the ideal scenario of a local business person with a local product. The other thing that this may do is put some additional awareness out there so that perhaps there's an entrepreneur out there that may want to engage in something like this. And then if that's the case, we have a system here where that person can integrate into a farmer's market. Okay.
Can I make one comment on the...
Sure.
And also, I think it's not necessarily just the non-farmers VIA booths that are food booths. I think there was someone out there last weekend that was selling vases. And I mean, someone could sell jewelry. There's lots of talented people in this community. So it's not just food, I think, for those booths.
Okay, any other comments from anyone? All right, why don't we try a motion then?
I'll move that we adopt a resolution of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande approving conditional use permit number 13-003 applied for by the Rio Grande Village Improvement Association located in Olahan Alley parking area between Short Street and South Mason Street, that we include the proposed condition about filling vacancy in certified farmers market, that we eliminate, I'm assuming it's in here, that we eliminate the grandfathering for VIA vendors. I don't know if that's actually in here or not, or was that a proposal? Okay, all right. So is it in here that we're grandfathering?
A condition of approval number 9 okay. is talking about non-farmer vendors.
Yeah. Non-farmer should be restricted those from San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties. So I guess we would want to reword that to fit what I think was the council consensus was that non-farmer, that I think we reverse this to say that non-farmer vendors from San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties will be given first priority to those slots.
We just based this on the feedback we got from the VIA, and the feedback was as far as whether the vendors are local or not has not been an issue, that all the vendors are local. The issue is what they're selling.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that's where we put the alternative of grandfathering them in, because at least according to Mr. Lund, we have local vendors, but they're selling items that are produced from out of the area.
All right, so then I guess we're talking about non-finder just shall be, and their products shall be restricted to those from San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara counties, unless there are open, it's hard. Unless there are open slots that cannot be filled with local products and vendors. We need to start over with that sentence.
I'm wondering if it's there. Simpler to do it in two conditions, to leave the current condition as recommended and then focus on what alternative, the way you want to word the alternative.
So non-farm vendors shall be restricted to those vendors, but we still want to say vendors and their products shall be restricted to those from San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara counties. 10 would be in the event that all slots cannot be filled by local vendors and products, that the slots will be open to other.
And what I've seen in front of me.
I said it on the. It was my first.
Okay.
Change.
Okay. Thank you.
Before I got off on that tangent.
And then what about the 1 year look back?
Oh yes, and I would like us to at least by memo take a look back at how the vendor mix has worked out for the farmers market.
Would you be willing to add encourage the FMA to seek out organic farmers?
I know it's appropriate to the CUP. But
I just got here. I'm new. On Planning Commission, we could add that. I mean, if that doesn't work, but that's important to me, and I think it's probably important to some people that live here too. It's not. We're not saying it must be, we must have some, but I would just like the Farmers Market Association to know that that's a good idea for a lot of people that live here. But
okay.
If it's not appropriate, I don't want to.
Got to come back to the Mayor Pro Tem. Are you willing to put that in the motion or not?
I think at this point I'd like to leave it out of the motion.
Okay. All right. So that's not in the motion. Does your second still hold?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
Could you repeat the motion?
Oh, you don't.
Okay. I'm just teasing.
You are kidding, right. I think we all understand it. Everybody else may not, but I think we understand it. Okay. Roll call, please.
Mayor Pro Tem McCree?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnett?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. All right, I've had a request for a 5 to 7 minute necessity break before we get into the second public hearing. So council will take a brief recess. Okay, council is back in session, and we are on item 9, our public hearings. And next on the agenda is 9B. This is consideration of a conditional use permit, case number 12-002, variance 12-004, and amended vested tentative tract map, case number 12-001. This is Oak Park Boulevard. The applicant is Russ Chappelle.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. One quick point of clarification. During the break, staff did provide you with a revised site plan that was brought forward by the applicant's team at the start of tonight's meeting. So staff wanted to make you aware of that. My presentation will still be centered around the existing site plan that was included with your agenda packet. And I will allow the applicant should speak further to the modifications that have been made. So this is item 9B. It's consideration of permits for the construction of a 69-bed residential care facility and 8 townhomes located on Oak Park Boulevard. And just to make everybody aware of where we're talking about, The Oak Park Professional Plaza is located on the southeast corner of Oak Park Boulevard and James Way. It's surrounded by the Best Western Casa Grande Inn, Meadow Creek, and the Kmart Center, as well as a church to the north and the city limit line with Pismo Beach, along with Pismo Beach developments to the west. Looking at the property specifically, it is zoned office mixed use. However, it was an integral part of a prior plan development and therefore does require city council action. Surrounding land uses do include medical offices, a fitness center, hotel, church, residential developments, as well as the Pismo Beach developments that I mentioned earlier. The project site itself is 1.8 acres, again located in the Oak Park Professional Plaza. The plaza is part of a master plan, however, that master plan has been amended many, many times throughout the years. The subject property is currently entitled with a 19-lot, 24-unit equivalent townhome and condominium project with a 25-foot setback from the top of Meadow Creek's bank. This entitlement does run through May of 2016 due to state law. This is the front side of Phase 1. Originally, the applicant did propose tandem garages, which had the garage door located about here. However, during Planning Commission review, it was discussed that tandem garages can be problematic with illegal conversions of garage space, as well as people not parking two cars in them. So it was kind of directed that the applicant revise that and allow single-car garages with covered carport parking. Here's the architect's rendering of the care facility. Again, a mix of materials and colors, as well as a portico share covering the patient drop-off area. In the rear view of the building, this has been modified slightly. This does not match exactly with the site plan that's in front of you tonight, as the kind of southern portion of the building has been basically chopped off and added to the second floor to allow for additional 13 parking spaces, which now is 14 parking spaces. Lastly, this slide just gives you a full frontal of the care facility project. And again, it does show the varying materials and colors. Now, with regard to architecture, many different materials and colors will be utilized on the care facility. Colors include beige, green, and brown hues. Materials include items such as cement fiber lap siding, smooth cement plaster, asphalt shingles, Eldorado stone bases, and so forth. The windows will be aluminum and the trim painted to complement the building's architecture. The townhomes will utilize similar materials. However, they will, in order to complement the care facility, but they will mix up their display and colors to where they won't be completely matching. And the materials board is available up front for the council to take a look at. Now, with regard to parking, parking at the site is incredibly confusing, and I will do my best to clarify as much as I can. Now, the parking has been an issue at the plaza in the past and obviously continues to be an issue today at some time. Looking at the proposed project, however, both phases require 55 parking spaces. In total, the project will construct 50 new parking spaces. I know in the staff report it does mention that the townhomes do require 63 parking spaces, and they are providing 58. However, based on Planning Commission's review, commissioners felt that it wasn't applicable to count the garage spaces within the tandem units as being provided for the entire project, as those would be solely basically set aside for the townhomes themselves. Staff saw this point in the code. Our municipal code does not dictate anything on actually dedicated spaces. So staff did suggest that if the commission were to move ahead with a recommendation to not include those garage spaces, that they also not require the 8 additional parking spaces. So under that kind of understanding, the total required is 55 and the total provided is 50, which comes to a 9% parking reduction. There are 10 spaces that are currently in existence adjacent to this main drive aisle. In order to gain access to the new parking lot, which is currently dirt, the applicant will remove some of the spaces, and in total, 9 will be remaining. Now, there have been many meetings related to the plaza's parking issue, which resulted from the use of peak hour demand parking data that did not reflect the reality of how the fitness center is used. The fitness center's peak hours are between the hours of 8 a.m. and 11 a.m., again, and with 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. peak. Since 2004, some of these parking issues have been managed by restricting certain parking spaces for the particular uses, including the memory care or the medical offices, as well as Kennedy Club Fitness. And the applicant actually does employ a security guard to monitor where people park and where they go to enforce those parking regulations. With regard to access and circulation, the site and plaza are accessed from James Way. The easterly driveway, which is the, if you're looking at the site plan, it's the lower driveway, has been proposed to be limited only to ingress as well as for emergency vehicle egress. Originally, staff had seen site plans with both ingress and egress. However, due to safety concerns of having multiple egress points in such close proximity, staff did recommend limiting the lower driveway to ingress only. Now, there is an access easement for the benefit of the motel property, which does cross through the project site with a direction change in the S-curve leading toward the Kennedy Club Fitness. And it should be noted that this access is not reciprocal through the motel property. Density, I understand density was rather concerning, confusing as well. The density for office mixed-use districts in the municipal code is 20 dwelling units per gross acre for mixed-use projects. However, there is a separate density provision for congregate care and assisted living facilities, which allows up to 34 dwelling units per gross acre. So what staff did was took a look at how much land area was dedicated to the townhomes and applied the 20 dwelling units per gross acre to that, as well as how much land area was dedicated to the assisted living facility, and applied the 34 dwelling units to that. Staff also, in consideration of the fact that the Alzheimer's care is run more like a hospital, staff did include discussion in the staff report that because of this, there is the potential for the council to not consider those units toward overall density. The thought process behind this was similar to a hospital. They are constructed and their size is determined basically made on other site constraints such as parking setbacks, size of the parcel itself. However, so staff wanted to bring that to the council's attention. However, if the council feels that they would like to include the Alzheimer's care units in the total density calculation, the project still would be just under the maximum density allowed and staff would have no opposition to that. Now, with regard to the creek setback, the current setback for Meadow Creek is 50 feet from the top of the creek bank. Now, that is in the municipal code. The current entitlement, however, was approved to be built at a 25-foot setback from the top of the bank, which was the code provision at that time. The applicant is currently proposing a 35-foot setback. Staff is in support of the reduced setback from 35 feet from 50 feet for several reasons. The first is the current entitlement, in light of the current entitlement at 25 feet, the narrowness of the lot to accommodate a full 50-foot setback along with access, and the uniqueness of the site in that it is one of the only properties along the Meadow Creek tributary that is not within a conservation area and actually does have the potential for development on it. One item with regard to the creek setback that was raised at the Planning Commission was the inclusion of the parking lot and as well as the gardens and walkways in that setback area. To address this, staff did add a condition of approval that all those surfaces be of pervious nature, so either pervious asphalt, pervious concrete, pervious pavers, and so forth. With regard to landscaping, the applicant is proposing to install new landscaping for both phases of the project. However, during the ARC's original review of the project, the landscape plans for the Phase 1 townhomes was not yet developed, and so a condition was added that the final landscaping plans for both phases return to the ARC for final review and recommendation. Now, as a part of the mitigated negative declaration, significant creek restoration will be included as part of the project and is outlined in the wetland mitigation plan, which was referenced in staff's environmental document. And the applicant will revegetate the creek setback area with riparian vegetation, which includes California sycamores, cottonwoods, willows, and similar plants. And this slide shows the current conceptual landscaping of the townhomes since the ARC's review and per Planning Commission's review of the project as well. And as you can see, they are proposed to be of similar species. With regard to affordable housing, the project is required to restrict 5% of the units for very low income and levels and 10% of the units for lower income levels. With the 8 townhomes that are proposed, this results in a 0.4 and 0.8 unit limitation, respectively. In this case, in-lieu fees are an option for the applicant to meet the affordable housing requirements. The Staff Advisory Committee did review the project back in June of 2013. Members of the SAC were in support of the project with conditions of approval that were included in the attached resolution. It should be noted that since their review of it, staff has discussed the project with the fire chief. His original understanding of the project was that there was reciprocal emergency access through the motel site. However, in light of that, he does have concerns with regard to the limited multiple points of ingress and egress and limiting them only to James Way. Obviously, the fire chief would like to have complete 360-degree access around all buildings within the city. However, after talking with him today, he did indicate to staff that he is still in support of the project and does believe that no matter what could occur at that site, that the fire department would be able to get on site in an effective manner and fight a fire or any other such disaster. The ARC did review the project in July of last year. They did recommend approval of the project with specific conditions addressing additional architectural details, which have been addressed by the applicant's team, additional landscaping, and a condition on signage for the plaza. The final landscape plans, again, are conditioned to return to the ARC for review, as well as any substantially different architectural designs. Now, the Planning Commission reviewed the project twice, once on October 1st of last year and a second time on January 7th of this year. There were many issues that were raised and discussed during these two meetings. Commissioners did express concern over the compatibility of the townhomes with the rest of the plaza, the overall parking for both the project and the plaza at large, as well as the creek setback going from 50 to 35 feet. However, at the end of the January 7th meeting, the Planning Commission did recommend approval of the project as proposed with minor conditions that are reflected in the attached resolution. With regard to environmental review, an initial study was completed and a mitigated negative declaration was developed for the project. This was based partly on the previous entitlement and the mitigated negative declaration that was prepared for that, as well as use of those technical studies and corresponding updates that have occurred since then. The SLO APCD did review the project and provided support for the inclusion of housing near commercial businesses that meet daily living needs, as well as provided mitigation measures to ensure that no significant impacts resulted with regard to air quality. Also, the Native American Heritage Commission did respond to the initial study, which is attachment 12 of staff's report, regarding the cultural and archaeological resources at the site. Staff did speak with the representative from the Heritage Commission, and following that discussion, it was determined that the previous Phase 1 archaeological study that was done on that site, as well as the mitigation measures that staff had already included in the mitigated negative declaration, were sufficient to mitigate any potential impacts. With regard to public notice, a notice of public hearing was mailed to all property owners within 500 feet of the site. That's an expansion from the typical 300-foot boundary. This was in line with staff's routing of the environmental documentation. The notice of public hearing was also published in the Tribune as well as posted at City Hall and on the city's website on January 14th. Tonight's agenda and staff report were posted on the city's website and at City Hall on January 24th. Now, staff has received several letters and comments from the public regarding the proposed project. They are several email correspondences, which are attachments 13 and 14. Staff has also had phone and email conversations with Kevin Kennedy of Kennedy Club Fitness, both prior to the previous Planning Commission meetings, as well as brief email correspondence before tonight's meeting. And documents from the Casa Grande owner, Ray Bunnell, dated dates of September, October, December, and January, have all been included as Attachment 15. Comments on the project have been rather similar overall. They include the high density and intensity of the development at the site, parking for the overall plaza, traffic increases compared to current conditions, the emergency access issue, parking and access easements benefiting Casa Grande, as well as access easements benefiting Kennedy Club Fitness. However, through all of that, the Planning Commission did recommend that the City Council adopt the mitigated negative declaration prepared for the project and approve the permits for the construction of the care facility and townhomes. And that does conclude staff's presentation, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Questions on the staff report? Okay, well, we're going to start on my left this time with Councilmember Barnage.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have one, Matt. When you talked about the parking, so you talked about that I had in the staff report that 55 was required. And then I see on the new site plan they had added 8 for 63. Is that right? Did I do that right?
55 were required, again, based on the exclusion of the townhome garages per Planning Commission's recommendation. Mm-hmm. Staff did not have full adequate time to review the revised site plan.
Okay.
However, it does appear, based on my rough estimation, that approximately 12 new parking spaces have been
12.
Added.
12, okay. Yeah. Now, so if there's indeed 12 added to the 55, is there still a mixed use reduction, or does that bring it even above that?
So the 55 spaces is actually the requirement for the proposed development. They originally provided 50 spaces, so the additional 12 would bring that to 62. So they would actually be technically over parked.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. That's my only question right now. Thank you.
Okay. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Ms. Mayor. Let's stick with parking for the first question I have. When we look at the diagrams, both the ones that were provided earlier and as well as now, in the lower left-hand corner, we have either 14 or 15 spaces. They're identified as shared parking with the hotel, although the new diagram says 21 shared spaces with assisted living for night use only. And the question I have would be, going back, and I know there are different opinions, shall we say, on the parking easements and the thruway easement. But my understanding from the hotel owner is that he expects to have unlimited access to those parking spaces 24 hours a day. So if we take those, in this case, 14 spaces out, what does that do with the numbers of parking spaces provided?
I would have to calculate how that impacts the total amount of parking provided.
Well, my guess, you said we had 50 plus 12 new is 62 minus 14.
Correct.
Puts us down at 48.
Correct.
So we're underparked.
Correct. And in that case, it would be... about a 12 to 13% reduction.
I do have some other questions. Let me go through my notes here. Bear with me for a minute. On the circulation, if we take a look at some of the diagrams in here for the bus and traffic turns, I have to say they're nice and pretty, but I really don't get any information from these diagrams. What do they tell me? I'm looking at page A1.1 for the bus turning study and A1.2 for the truck turning study.
Correct. So one of the conditions of approval for the project does require that the applicant show and prove that buses, a range of vehicles, including buses and trucks, can maneuver through the site, including that S-curve. It was something that the Planning Commission did look at quite extensively and had questions on. So the applicant's engineer actually provided standard kind of typical bus and truck turning movements on that site to show that they can actually navigate through that S-curve rather than heading straight out of the site.
Okay. Do we know just how much bus or traffic or truck traffic or whatever traffic actually utilizes the hotel access?
Staff has heard differing estimations throughout the public hearings for this project, somewhere around 3 truck trips per week and at most maybe 1 bus per day.
I think that's all I have for right now, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, please.
Go ahead.
The first question has to do with drainage, and particularly over by the care facility. What direction does the water drain coming off the facility?
Currently, it would drain toward the back of the property, so down into the garden area where it would infiltrate and percolate into the groundwater system.
It would move away from the creek, is what you're telling me.
No, it would move towards the creek.
Toward the creek.
Correct.
And that would include oils from asphalt and everything else. But I mean, the idea behind having setbacks and doing drainage would seem to me that we're trying to keep that from getting to creek level. And yet you're telling me that's exactly what we're doing.
Correct, and the thought process behind including pervious surfaces in both, let's say, the parking lot, for example, since you mentioned oils and that sort of thing, is that they would be allowed time to percolate through the soil structure and actually filter out before fully entering the creek's water system.
And what makes you think that's going to happen? I mean, what's being done so that would happen? Because if we have a hard rain, it's not going to sit there. It's going to run down to the creek. Mm-hmm.
The project is conditioned to conform to all applicable stormwater and drainage requirements so that there'll be infrastructure in the site, including the necessary the traps within the drains themselves to clean the water for water quality purposes, and the creek setback area will provide a bioswale to slow the water down. In big storms, those will be bypassed and drained to the creek, but they'll still be cleaned for water quality purposes to the maximum extent possible in accordance with stormwater requirements.
So there will be some actual, other than any sort of bioswale, there'll be some actual drainage that'll pick up the water and at least move some of the water away from the creek.
They'll clean the water prior to discharge to the creek.
Where will it? So it's still going to discharge it into the creek regardless?
That's where whatever water can't percolate will discharge to the creek as it does now.
We're not sending it out to James Way or any other direction?
We'll have to refer to the site drainage plan. Some of the water may be draining to the creek.
Okay.
I mean to the street.
Okay. And then let's talk about those dark parking spaces that are the shared parking spots that Councilman Costello brought up earlier. There's these 4 spots right in front of the facility. Are they the normal width?
Again, having received this shortly prior to tonight's meeting, staff hasn't had a chance to measure those. I do have my scale on me, and I'll take a look at it very quickly.
There was a lot of discussion about the fact that these dark parking spots were giving Mr. Burnell basically equal amount of easement that he had prior to the project. But it sure doesn't seem that way based on this restriction. I'm wondering why the restriction's there at all.
Are you referring to the nighttime restriction?
Yeah.
I would leave that up to the applicant to answer. However, it is a part of their project description that that easement will be essentially changed to nighttime use only for the motel property.
I have a question for Mr. Carmel, if you're able to answer it. And that is, if this project were to go through its paces and get all the city permits and everything else that it would need to get from the city, not barring what else might be going on, but just from us, could they start building this project tomorrow, assuming they had all that those things done?
If all the conditions were complied with, barring neighbor getting an injunction preventing the project from moving forward, yes. But I want to note something that relates to your last question, and I think that's why Matt indicated that's a part of the project description. The new 20, I guess they're 21 spaces now?
Yes.
Yeah, the new 21 spaces, I think there were 13 before. The requirement that they are restricted to nighttime use only by hotel patrons and agents, that became a part of the project description. So essentially, the owner of the Casa Grande, Mr. Bunnell, is going to have to agree to that. It's going to have to be in the form of some recordable instrument that truly restricts the use of those spaces to nighttime use only by the hotel and its agents and employees and guests.
So if we approve the current project description, that issue alone has to be ironed out before it can be moved forward.
Well, the city would require a recordable document that evidenced that fact, that these are truly restricted by some legal instrument and they won't be able to be used during the daytime. Enforcement of that is another issue.
Yeah, that's common on this site. Okay, those are all my questions, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, fine. Mayor Pro Tem, do you have questions?
Yeah, I did just real quickly want to come back to the emergency access issue with the two here, and I did talk to the fire chief as well. Where else do we have emergency access where we essentially have two driveways that are 15 feet apart here as the dual emergency access to what's going to be a hospital?
Are you referring to elsewhere in the city?
Yeah.
Staff is unaware of basically almost any other location in the city where there are two commercial driveways this close together that would serve as emergency ingress and egress points.
Okay. And do you have any other comments from the fire chief on how he expected to accomplish, if there was a significant fire on in the hospital section, how he would get two or three or four apparatus on this site to fight it?
During my discussions with the fire chief, it was essentially he said, wherever the fire is, I will get there. And that's not to make light of the seriousness of the fire, but he sat on the phone with me for a while and was strategizing where he would put all of his people, and he said with 95% certainty he is confident he would be able to address any situation at the site.
Okay. And then the second question,
one clarification that the motel does have access into the site, so...
He is assuming that he will be, even though there is no reciprocal easement, he's assuming he'll be able to get in from that side.
Yes, because that access being open would prohibit an obstruction of that access being placed there.
But in fact, since it's a one-way easement, and I'm not saying that the motel operator would do this, but they could actually gate that and give their patrons the key to use it to exit. It's not a public access.
That's correct.
The second question I have is related to the shared parking, and you and I discussed this earlier. And that is another site where we, in fact, have a shared parking, credit, I've forgotten what we're supposed to call it, that has any restricted parking, let alone, and here I get about, I think only a quarter of these are unrestricted. Is there anywhere where we've done something similar, even on a smaller scale?
Not to staff's knowledge, I do know that the dedication of those parking facilities did result from look-back provisions after Kennedy Club Fitness and one of the medical offices was constructed. There was a two-year look-back period to address these parking issues. At that time, there was a parking internal parking study done, which discussed the peak hour demand issues that I mentioned earlier, and that was the solution that the council did approve at that time, was to restrict certain parking spaces for certain businesses between certain hours so that medical office patients could find a parking place near the facility, as well as still allow Kennedy Club Fitness to have some parking on hand. But I do not know of another shared parking situation in the city where actually some of the spaces are essentially claimed for certain periods of time.
All right, thank you.
Matt, I had a couple of questions, and this one of them may be more appropriately, in fact, both of them may be more appropriate for Mr. Chappelle, I don't know. Do you know offhand if the 24 units, the townhomes, condos, are they rental units or units for sale?
Many of them were on their individual lots, so staff would assume that some of them were meant for sale, if not all of them. However, that might be better answered by the applicant.
The reason why I'm asking the second question is it sort of, I guess, kind of backs into the circulation activity on the site itself. Was there discussion of the fact that at least some of those units could be classified as workforce housing? You have employees at Kennedy, you have employees at the existing medical plaza, you'll have additional employees at the Alzheimer's Care Center. Was the intent in the discussion that some of those employees might be interested in residing on site there?
I would continue to ask the applicant that question. However, I do know that that has been discussed by both the applicant's team as well as one of the planning commissioners during the January 7th review actually stated this is workforce housing. There is the opportunity for, as you mentioned, nearby employees to live there and essentially walk directly to work in a three-second walk. So it has been discussed, and I believe that is partly the intent of the applicant.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions for staff at this time?
I do have one more I forgot to ask.
Sure.
I'm trying to figure out the precedent of having something encroach into the setback like we talked about, Teresa, because I don't remember in Planning Commission ever having parking spaces encroach into a setback like this does, and maybe my memory's just getting bad, but I just don't remember anything like it. So I'm wondering if it's precedent setting.
Well, I would say the difference between this particular site is that the variance is being requested, and the variance provisions for creek setbacks are fairly well specified in the code in terms of requiring all biological and creek studies and the appropriate mitigation for any identified impacts being spelled out in the mitigation plan. So whereas we've been, there's been requests to deviate from creek setback standards before, there's a substantial amount of work involved in preparing those studies and identifying those impacts and addressing those impacts with long-term mitigation measures that we have not typically seen before, and they are addressing them here.
Thank you, Ms. Lynch.
All right, we're going to open the public hearing portion of this item, and it is characteristic to allow the applicant to go first. And so I would like to invite the applicant to come forward and provide any additional information you would like to.
Sure. My name is Russ Chappelle, and I'm the applicant. Pardon me. And I'm probably somewhat of a familiar face because this is the third time I am hopefully taking this particular site and getting it entitled. The first was in 2003, so I've been at work in one form or another for over a decade. to find something that would fit well here. And I'm really proud of this particular solution to that and this particular proposal, and don't hopefully ever have to do any of this again, because this is indeed the highest and the best use of the property, both from a parking standpoint, because that's really how I ended up here, finding out what has the least traffic impact and parking impact of any of the uses, because it's kind of been assumed that this whole site was medical and professional, which is parking for every 250 square feet. The assisted living facility, basically I have to park the staff at its peak volume, which is actually overestimated at 20, but we'll just stick with 20. It gets to 20 just because of people on overlapping schedules. So in other words, when one staff comes in, another one is leaving, they count both of them in an overlap of a 60-minute period as requiring parking. But it is basically the least impactful use of the site. So in 2003, I had entitlement for a 25,000-square-foot medical building. Maybe we could put a site map up if you don't mind. There we go. Yeah. All of the lower, there's a pointer somewhere.
Probably. Here you go.
Right here.
Oh, thanks. Okay. All of this, both of these lots were solid parking. The building of 25,000 square feet was here. And that was entitled in 2003. What ended up happening was those physicians decided to go to the Kitticorner Pismo Beach and create the campus there, and that's why that project basically died. And when it died, Rob Strong came to me, who was at that time the planning director, and said, "Dr. Chappelle, you know, we're sorry that that happened. It didn't work out. Would have loved to have seen all the doctors here and all that kind of stuff. Why don't I work with you, and why don't we lay out something for a residential component, which is what is presently entitled?" And that was in 2006 that it was entitled. So the reason why that's pertinent is that I'm really not here so much to ask permission to build something, because I have an entitlement, as you saw, or the staff, Matt, had mentioned a moment ago, that I have till 2016 to build all of the residential units, both the 8 right here, and then an additional 10, but I think it ends up being residential equivalent units of something rather, maybe 18, something like that. Anyway, I have the rights to do that presently, but I think that this is a far superior plan. We have created parking even since the Planning Commission. We've created another dozen spaces, which I'll let the architect tell you more about. But we're effectively overparked, as staff had just mentioned. I don't think, no matter what I do, even if I completely eliminated this building here and just created sole parking there, there will always be some parking issue to this site, I believe, primarily because of the health club. But I don't consider them a bad neighbor. They're a great neighbor. Kevin and I were the first two to, you know, be on site here, and I consider our relationship good. We spoke just yesterday, actually. So that kind of takes us from 2003 entitlement, 2006. Planning Commission approved this 4-1, and I would appreciate your approval as well. Now, let me just, one thing I can talk about is health. That's something I understand. I'm not some massive developer. You've seen me here before. I'm just a guy who used to practice dentistry here in town, still live in the county. And regarding health, there's health to a community and health to a city and health to a site, even a health to a location. And this particular location is going to be its healthiest when the parking does work. And we've worked hard to do that. Staff has been very helpful in helping us accomplish that. I hope that the architect in reviewing the numbers can ease your minds at that. But quite honestly, even if I built a parking structure, which I don't know how I would do. There would be environmental issues with that, I'm sure. But no matter what I do, there'll probably always be some parking concern here. But the parking on site does work. Part of the reason why it works, I believe, is Kevin Kennedy has gone and purchased 30 spaces from Ray Bunnell And so he has additional parking that has yet really to be tapped. Those 30 spaces, he could tell you more about it than I, but at the moment they're just being used by staff, and staff might be 5 or 6, so that leaves quite a surplus of parking. Seeing as though the motel does not use all of its parking, that leaves quite a bit yet to be addressed. So there was a comment made a moment ago about this area right here, which is designed to address a parking easement, non-specific parking easement that's there with the motel. We don't have a desire to restrict this. It's just an assumption, basically, because a hotel guest comes, checks in, and they're usually there from, let's say, 5 or 6 in the afternoon till whenever they leave in the morning, 9 or 10 o'clock, whatever is typical. But that's the assumption, is that if there was a parking need that the motel has, it would be a nighttime need. We don't necessarily need to restrict it. But it would make little sense for a hotel guest to be over here in the motel, walk past all kinds of vacant parking, come over here during the day when they're probably out enjoying the dunes or the beach or who knows what. So that I just wanted to clarify. We're not restricting the parking. So the healthiest thing that we can do with this site is to, A, respect it, and also find a need within the community. And the assisted living facility, I think, is a very clear need. There is no memory care in South County. There's not a single bed of memory care. That's the single largest growing population within our demographic, and it's a need. And this is a great site because of all the professional and doctor spaces all surrounding it. Lastly, I just wanted to tell you a very, very quick story of a person that I know, a 90-year-old man who, because it had rained, or it wasn't pouring rain, but it had rained, and he had assistance and nevertheless slipped and fell and broke his hip. That broken hip resulted in his death 7 days later, and sometimes it's hard for us. You know, I go to, actually, Kennedy and I work out most every day. It's hard for me to relate to what it's like to be 90 or 80 or 85 or with Alzheimer's or something like that. But these are very fragile people. They're there in with the need that hopefully we're supplying, because they're in limbo and they're fragile. So when it comes time to design something like a porte-cochere to have a covered area, there's nothing that we can do that's going to overdo it for the health and the safety of these people. And that's why the design is as careful as it is and as complete as it is and as thorough as it is. So everything that's on site here really is there for a reason. And I'll let the rest of the people who've been, you know, working with me to address how we've created parking and additional parking. And even though technically by numbers we're overparked, I don't think we could ever overpark the site. But we've done our best and we've worked hard at it. And this is the best plan. This is the highest and best use. And I would appreciate your support in that. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Steve Rigger. I'm with Air Studio Architects. I'm the project architect. I want to thank you, Honorable Mayor and fellow councilmen, for taking the time to review this project and for your consideration. I also want to thank Matt and staff and Teresa have been doing just a phenomenal job in working with us and fielding questions and bringing every concern to our attention in a very timely manner. I tip my hat to them, and you know, we're very lucky to have them. As I mentioned, I'm the project architect. Russ Chappelle, who just spoke, is part of the development team. Ryan Petetit and John Belcher are also here, and they are also part of the development team. The project that you have in front of you is basically addressing a need that is desperately needed in this city, and that is for assisted care and memory care, and also workforce housing. That's pretty much what the 8 units are for. That's why they're in this configuration. As was alluded to, this was the original site plan that we developed. The main thing that our whole reasoning for having this site plan the way it is We wanted to maintain the 8 units that were originally approved. We redesigned them just to make them a lot more efficient. We made them 3 stories, basically, or it's actually 2 stories with the basement. And by tucking the parking under, what that did was made it so that the units worked just a lot better. So it's a much nicer unit. And so if someone who wants to buy some sort of, you know, a workforce-type housing, it would be definitely on the higher end. It's very nicely laid out. It has the rooms aren't cramped or small. They're very spacious. It's very open. The memory care and the assisted living, we oriented that towards the creek because we wanted this community who we're going to be living here to be able to have, to take in those beautiful views of the creek. They get to enjoy it, and we actually have a very nice outdoor area that's oriented towards the creek where they can sit out there on nice days. There's even little garden areas where they can do their own gardening. They can enjoy the outdoors and actually overlook this very beautiful open space that's right behind them. It definitely gives, even though we're only 35 feet off of the creek, having that creek abut this site really makes it so that it gives the illusion of being on acres and acres of property. So, as was mentioned, we do have parking issues, and one of the main things that we did was, as in the original one, we were trying to make this a one-way drive aisle, and it had limited parking, and that we had some additional parking at the end. What we ended up doing, and this is what was just submitted to you just tonight, was we actually ended up adding 12 spaces. We reconfigured the main parking here, which added, there used to be 8 in this row right here, and now there's 10. There used to be 2 down here, and now there's 4. We also added an additional space here. We added 3 spaces here, and then the big one was that we shifted this entire, the workforce housing back about, I want to say it was about 6 feet, and that allowed us the ability to add 4 parallel spaces. Those spaces are roughly about 9 feet wide by about 22 feet long, so it gives the ability to easily park in there. If we do need to expand them, we do have some room, so if they need to be 24, I know it kind of ranges. Parallel spaces are kind of an odd duck. I find, different dimensions for each one, whether they're 9x22, 8x24, it kind of ranges. One of the comments that, Councilmember Brown brought up was in regards to our drainage. If you actually look at the civil plan, it's sheet C2. We actually have this site. This project, along with pretty much any project now, is required to comply with the LID measures, and that's low impact development. And so what we're required to do is we actually have subgrade infiltration. Asphalt parking lots, the first rain basically washes away a lot of the oils and dirts that accumulate onto those parking lots. And what you're trying to do is when the first rain comes, which is usually relatively light, it's going to go through these subgrade filters that are located, and I wish I had this slide up here. They're actually located behind the 8-unit project. They're located inside this drive aisle, and there's 2 additional ones located in this area and in this area. And what those do is they basically act like a big biofilter. So the water will enter into these filtration structures that will actually clean the water before they get into the creek. Some examples of this kind of surface unit that's in the back is along at the Target Center and at Costco. That whole all along Las Osas Valley Road, there's a drainage area that has basically is a big biofilter. On the Target Center, there's also between their center and the Auto Park Mall, there's a whole biofilter that takes the water before it gets into the creek. The drainage on that one was a little bit different because we were trying to beat the peak. And so we were trying to rush all our water through our biofilter and get it into the creek before the rest of the communities that were up the creek actually had their water in there. So basically our project was used to clean out the creek before the other areas that drained into it. This one, we're actually slowing the water down a little bit by going through these subgrade infiltration structures. And so what that will do is it will basically, when the peak hits, after all the oil and sediment and everything go through these infiltration structures, then basically clean water comes out and hits into the creek. So there's always a bypass.
So there's no water getting drained out towards James Way or anything like that?
No, the whole design was to basically have it either, if it doesn't perk into the soil naturally, then it's going to eventually fill into the creek. And again, I wish we brought our civil engineer on this one to provide a little bit more information. As I was talking about on the parking, we added 12 parking spaces just in the last couple days, which I think is going to help the project, just because we do have a lot of different, you know, people trying to vie for a small amount of spaces. As far as the various parking easements that are on here, John Belcher is here, and he's going to be the one that would definitely be able to speak to that and tell you exactly what's allowed for these various colored spaces. So part of the Planning Commission, part of our requirements for this project was to show that we can actually get a truck and a bus through here. And that's why this super exciting slide was actually shown, just to show that you can actually get a bus from the motel property through our property onto James Way. We just wanted to make sure that everyone saw that that can actually happen, and just keep your excitement levels down, because here's another one. We had to do a truck one as well, because, as you know, there are trucks that stay at the motel, and so they want to have the ability to actually pull their trucks through, and so this gives them the easiest way. At the Planning Commission, one of the big things was that Mr. Bunnell wanted to have direct access to James Way, and our project has a portico share, which is actually, it's required by our user. They want to have the ability to have guests who enter onto their facility to be dropped off in a dry area, and that's why that whole portico share is provided. And what that ends up doing is, from a truck driver standpoint, they're going to see that as an obstacle. Truck drivers are they're very common sense oriented, so they don't want to take their truck anywhere that it's going to get damaged or it's going to do damage. And so basically what they're going to do is they're going to find the path of least resistance, which is going to be to make this little S-turn and then head out to James Way. So that was a really exciting one, sorry. Next is, as you know, our packages are pretty colorful. We felt that having the different colors made it so that you can relate the different spaces, whether it's parking or rooms, you can relate it a little bit easier. Because especially on the smaller plans, it's kind of hard to read them. Big plans always seem to be kind of cumbersome. That's why we always just try to stick with the 11 by 17s. But what we wanted to show on this was, for the 8 units, what we were trying to do is basically make it so that on this level, you basically enter in, you have a driveway, and there's a garage, and then there's an entry that takes you up a set of stairs to the upper floor. On the care facility, what this designates is, we were trying to show that there are rooms, and on this is the basement level, and so this is actually more the Alzheimer's and memory care areas. So these areas are very secure. They're secure because people that are in the Alzheimer's rooms, they have to be in an environment where they can't get out. In an emergency, they will be assisted out, but for everyday use, they need to be basically watched and monitored to make sure that they don't get out, because especially with Alzheimer's patients, once they get out, they kind of wander, and so that's the last thing that anybody wants, is to have a poor, you know, senior citizen that's lost and can't find their way. They're extremely confused, and they usually become agitated. And so what we have is, this is a very secure area, and so in order to allow the assisted living or the memory care people to be able to use an outdoor area, we also have a fence that's about 5 to 6 feet tall. You can still see through it. It's basically used so that we also have a secure area for our Alzheimer's patients. It makes it so that they can also, like I said, enjoy the outdoors. They will have a little garden and also a little patio, so they can sit out there and enjoy the scenery just like the assisted living. Again, we have another colorful plan on the 8-unit. This is the living, dining, and kitchen areas. We also have a deck that's in the front, and then in the back, this backyard is actually at grade. And so all these units, now that we shifted them back, they're going to have a backyard that's roughly about 16 feet wide by about 8 feet deep. While it sounds kind of small, it is enough for like a vegetable garden or a little barbecue area. There's a lot of little things that you can do with that size of backyard. Personally, I have a backyard that's about 8 by 13, so it's a little bit bigger than my backyard, so you know, I would look at that as kind of luxury. In my backyard, I have my little barbecue, a little grass area, and a deck. So that's pretty much, you know, you can do a lot with a little space if you design it properly. As far as the, for the memory care and assisted living, this is the main floor. So basically our guests would enter here. They can go into this lobby space that has their mill room and a lobby and a fireplace. And then there's also activity areas in their main dining area. Our kitchen is also located here, and as are the main offices and some of the rooms. And then finally on the upper floor, we have, it's on the memory care, it's mostly just rooms, and we have a small little activity area that's going to be utilized by the assisted living. It's just a little media room. And then on the 8-unit, it's two bedrooms and two bathrooms. The overall design of this, we tried to keep it as a bungalow craftsman just because we wanted to make it so it was nice and inviting and warm and made people feel comfortable. And so this, Matt went through this perspective earlier, and this was just the back perspective. The 8 units, I wanted to show the before and after. Staff kind of alluded to how we used to have a tandem garage, and then we reduced that per planning commission's recommendations to a single car garage with a driveway in front. The original design actually had these garages right in front, and so what we ended up doing is now we shifted them back. So now you can't see the garages, but we created this little pass-through so that someone can park in their driveway and not have to walk out and about in order to get to their front door. This is another, Matt already went through this, but basically it's just another elevation showing the care facility and showing how we used varied roof lines and varied wall planes to kind of break down the architecture so you don't have one big flat building. And a little bit more. This is the slide for the 8-unit. Same thing, you're still going to be able to see the garages in this view, but this is one of the few times you're actually going to see it. Drawings are 2D drawings, it doesn't really take into consideration a perspective, so the garages are mostly going to be hidden because they're set back so far. The backyards, these are going to actually have fences, so you're only going to see a portion of this, of these actual doors. There's going to be a 6-foot fence that goes all the way around. And then last, this is the landscape plan for the assisted living portion. David Foote, who's the landscape architect, is here if you have any questions. And this is the 8-unit. One of the comments from the Planning Commission was to make this workforce housing extremely lush with their landscaping so that they can have kind of they would almost feel like they're on their own little island, not surrounded by commercial uses. And so in my personal opinion, I think we did a good job on just kind of doing exactly that and having trees surround these areas so they actually feel like they're, you know, they're not looking at buildings at every corner. They actually have, they'll see glimpses of buildings, but mostly trees and bushes. And that is the end of my presentation. Thank you for your consideration. If you have any questions, like I said, the whole team is here.
I do have a question for you. You were talking about, for the assisted care facility, that there's a covered entrance or something. Can you show me on one of those?
So it's called a portico chair, but it actually has rooms above it. Okay. And so this is covered. If you look on the plan, so this is where it would be.
Can you get to one that shows the road, too?
So the road is it comes in right here.
So that's covered?
This is covered, yes.
So that's the one-way entrance in that goes towards the hotel. So trucks come in through there?
No, trucks would actually go, they would exit from the hotel through this little S-bend.
Okay, so the trucks will not be entering there?
No.
And that was there now?
I think they do, because there's no building right there. Right now it's just an open site.
Okay. The backyards, the prior site plan before you added the parking down below, what size were the backyards then?
I want to say they're about 12. They range from 12 to 14 feet, and now they're about 6 to 8 feet.
8 by 14. 6 to 8 by 14.
Yeah, so they were about 12 feet deep by about 14 to 16 feet wide, uh-huh. And now they're about 8 feet, 6 to 8 feet deep by 14 to 16 feet wide.
Okay. And then when Mr. Chappelle, when I had met with him prior to the meeting, he talked about one of the planning commissioners suggested adding parking up in that corner by Chappelle to the medical office building. Is that not an option now?
Actually, we didn't show it on this one because I can't guarantee it. I can't tell you. I can't stand up here and confidently tell you that I can definitely get those spaces.
Right.
We do have to make some negotiations with that with that operator to make sure, or with that property owner to make sure that that would be okay. But if we were able to do that, then essentially we would lose these two spaces and add mm-hmm. six, so we'd have a net gain of four.
Okay.
And those would be they would be on their property, and so we couldn't tell them absolutely that, even though that we're building them, we can't tell them that those are going to be used by everybody.
Right. It would be exclusively for Chappelle 2, the medical office
Correct.
Building. Okay. Now, has he spoken at all with that owner about the possibility of those of parking spaces?
I don't think at this time he has.
Okay.
He wants to, but we didn't want to show a drawing. We didn't want to.
No,
tell
I understand.
We can get more parking when.
Right. No, I understand that. Okay. I think those are my only questions. Thank you.
Just a couple of quick questions. One is, on the two-story side, the Altamont side, I don't see an... Is there no elevator?
Oh, actually, it's right here. It's right off the... There's actually two. There's a gurney elevator and a standard elevator. If you come in... Let's see. Let's go to the lobby.
Where it says the electric room next to the electric room?
Yeah, so if you're on sheet A1.4, right. It's right in... They're just delineated by two X's.
Really small plant. Okay.
Yeah, they're pretty small. But there's a gurney elevator, which is required by this use. So gurney elevators are typically... they have a 5,000-pound limit. And they're deeper. And then we have a standard elevator.
Okay, and the second question then relates to this porticature. So that extends out all the way across the driveway.
Yes. It's right next to our property line. So we're only about 2.5 feet off the property line.
So any vehicle that is like a fire truck, any vehicle that's coming in here is going to have, if they were going to the west end of the building, I think that would be west, would have to go through that under that portico.
Right, and we're working with the user to be able to have some sort of ramp structure inside. So there'd be some sort of ramp internally in this area that would allow that area to be lifted up, because the fire department wants 13 feet 6 inches clearance. And so we're kind of working with the grades and with our user to kind of create something that works. But it's definitely going to be 13 foot 6 clear so that the fire truck can get under it. And we're definitely going to still have rooms up above it.
Let me just step with that. Is that in the conditions of approval?
The 13-foot 6 clearance? Yes, it is in the conditions of approval.
All right, those are all my questions. Okay.
If there are no other questions, thank you very much. Let me check in with the applicant. Any other speakers that you would like to have come forward at this time?
Mr. Mayor, John Belcher, I would be available for questions. I thought I'd wait and we'll speak after, if we have a few minutes at the end, to clarify questions. Two quick clarifications. We did speak with Dr. Farrell tonight about the spaces next to Chappelle 2, and as I suspected, he has a use for that curb area there, both for turning radius and also it provides offloading services there. So we can't really squeeze those in there, but we did get the other 12 into the thing. The other point I wanted to make on the question that Councilmember Brown raised about the clarification, the discharge. As an approval, an earlier approval condition, we installed a clarifier that is already in existence down toward the creek so that the majority of the water I guess all the water that runs toward the creek from the parking lot has a clarifier already in effect. So all the systems that Mr. Rigger was talking about are in addition to that. So that's already functioning. So the city thought about that the last go around. So anyway, I'm sure there'll be other issues that'll come up. But thank you.
I thought you were going to do the presentation on the parking and explain the different parking.
I could explain the easement issue if you would like to.
The parking time. Restrictions in general does.
Yes. Oh, okay.
I'd
be happy to address that.
Okay.
I'm not sure how this the notion of restriction of parking to nighttime use came across. I think that there must have been some discussion in the project description about an assumption that the Bunnell property parking would only be used at night, but the recorded easement does not have a restriction to nighttime use only. As far as I know, the Bunnell easement's available 24 hours a day. It's rarely used, and when it is used, it seems to make more sense at night. But let's see if I can get okay. You don't have to change it now, but do you have a picture of the actual easement from the earlier maps, either from the map we presented at the Planning Commission? Anyway, hang on. He's pretty fast. So anyway, I guess we need to clarify for the record that it is not our intent to, by a project description, rewrite that easement or restrict Mr. Bunnell's use of the easement to nighttime only. So maybe it was our error in the presentation of materials to the city, but we did not intend that. So the issue came about from the first approval in 2006. The issue relating to the use of this parking easement here, the parking easement encroaches into a hillside up this way somewhat. But the lower area of it has been available for driving and parking, and some spaces have been placed in here. What we elected to do was to provide for tuck under parking into these buildings, and that frees up all these spaces for the center. Previously, the existing approval, we have parking that comes in this way, and we don't have the benefit of this row of parking. So by tucking under, we can provide for more parking in the rest of the center in addition to what's already required here. So if I could, there's one other issue, which is that there's an S-turn. This is the recorded route for exit, or I presume entrance, for Mr. Bunnell. He has an ingress, egress this direction with this S. He does not have a recorded easement to use the lower driveway, and there was quite a bit of discussion at our previous city council hearing about keeping this to be closed off altogether, or ultimately it's become an entry only for the use of the care facility here and for other patrons of the site as well. But he does not have an easement here. So this easement here is also problematic in that there is a severed section of it that he does not have a recorded easement over, but we've agreed to honor that so that he can have the access that goes out, but there is a legal gap in that easement. Let's see. So if we could go to the new parking exhibit, I can show how this is what we've done here. Can you show the one with the newest parking? Here we go. Okay. So one of the things Mr. Bunnell said was, well, he would like to park his trucks here. That's something that nobody's really in favor of. I guess it has happened, but it's really very rare. So there is an area that we created here that's 88 feet long that would be available to him for pull-in parking or for a particular guest, presuming it was available. None of his parking is exclusive, so all of these spaces are non-exclusive. However, the only competing interest is the care facility. So these are not available down here for the Kennedy Center. With respect to Kennedy, there were 19 spaces here. We've created 22 spaces for the Kennedy up here that are available to him. So we increased the number of spaces for Mr. Kennedy by putting these up here, which are closer to his place. I think Kevin will say that he might also have competing interests for the spaces, but at least they are in proximity to his facility. So going back to the hotel easement, we created a pull-through easement here, and we created these spaces here since the Planning Commission. These spaces, these three spaces, are within his current parking easement, and these spaces here are immediately adjacent to the space, the parking easement. So there's a total of 7 spaces there. There's 14 spaces here. That's a total of 21 spaces. Mr. Bunnell says that he should be able to get 18 spaces in the easement that's recorded. So we exceed that by 3, of course. But he disagrees that he should be requested to park in these other different areas. The guest parking that he rents to Mr. Chappelle is right here. To Mr. Kennedy. This is an area of the hotel with parking that's rarely used and apparently is available for the club to for their employees and I guess patrons. That's an overview.
And then you created the in green, those are spaces that are
microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry. In green, you created those. No, right corner can come. There we go. Those are exclusive to the care center.
These are the only exclusive spaces to the care center right here. We imagine that employees will park here and some guests, and the parking demands are really minimal on these care facilities. They do get some visitors, but it's usually for short periods of time, and visiting hours are limited. And anyway, that's the idea. There's also a space here for the center.
Thank you. I just wanted to get that before we got past.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. That concludes the applicant's presentation. We're now ready for general public comment on this particular public hearing item. If there's anyone else in the audience that would like to come forward on 9B, we would ask that you keep your comments brief. And please address the council as one body.
Good afternoon, Mayor, council members. My name is Fred Glick, and I'm the attorney for Ray Bunnell. And I will keep my comments as brief as possible. I'm going to only discuss the easements tonight, which there's two of them. You've already discussed those, the parking easement and the access easement. Access easement, well, let's strike that. The parking easement is a recorded easement. This is the first time I've seen this actual parking scheme. I've never seen that before. But up until tonight, Mr. Bunnell has been firm in a stance that he's not moving that parking easement. And the reason he's not is because that parking easement is uniquely suited for the use of the hotel. It can handle cars, it can handle buses, or it can handle trucks. And he's made that clear to Mr. Chappelle since the very start of Mr. Chappelle's efforts to develop this property. The important thing to understand is that unless Mr. Bunnell agrees to relocate that parking easement, then it's not going to be moved. And if it's not moved, that impacts the townhouses. They can't be built as designed. It also actually impacts the medical facility as well, because then the access road gets pushed over from what you're seeing on that diagram, so it virtually is the side of the access is right next to the building, the medical facility. Mr. Chappelle did not buy a virgin property. That property was encumbered with numerous easements. And those easements remain today. A lot of them have been changed. There's a number of recorded easements on the property. There's an abandonment and a re-granting of easements. Mr. Belcher talked about a gap. There is no gap. The abandonment and granting of new easements basically granted a new easement going up out of what I call the westerly, the S-turn access. In 2002, for whatever reason, the city closed that access off to that. They actually put up physical barriers so nobody could come in there. They had to go down on the easterly access, the lower one. They did that for a number of years, and in that time period, Mr. Chappelle informed Mr. Bunnell that he was to move down to the lower easement and use that easement, relocate that easement. He did. So that relocation has occurred, and it's my opinion under the law that he does not have to remove the location back to the original easement unless he consents to it. So as of today, we're taking a position. He also has an easement straight out. He's not the only one that has an easement going straight out, however. Mr. Kennedy has one as well, and so does the other medical facility. So Mr. Chappelle's got a long way to go to resolve all of these easement issues. And as of tonight, he has no understanding, no agreement with Mr. Bunnell on the relocation of the parking easement and on the access easement. Without that, this design, this project, this design won't fly, period. So Mr. Bunnell is going to come up and speak more on to the history of what has occurred. I think he's more up to date on that than I am. But that's it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
I'm Ray Bunnell, owner of Casa Grande Inn, and I think Mr. Glick did a pretty good job of describing the easement situation. I'd like to comment on some of the things that have been said. Mr. Belcher said that it was not their intent to limit my use of that parking area to the nighttime, but yet they have persisted on that ever since they started this. And from the very beginning, we told them we would not agree to anything like that. But they've continued until tonight. He's made this statement once before at the first Planning Commission. He showed a slide of my easement being up on the slope where the condos are and said that I could not park there anyway. Tonight he says that my easement goes up that slope. It does not. And he knows it doesn't. You can see it right there on that plan. It's in the flat, and it's fully paved and has been for close to 30 years. Now, why they're not willing to recognize it, I don't know. In the past, I've worked with Mr. Chappelle to do some minor modifications of those two easements on that lower lot to allow him to build what he wanted to build. In exchange for that, my upper easement was to be relocated and recorded on the lower route. And we have used that route for the past 10 years or more. When the condominium project was approved in 2006, the city closed off as a condition of approval that lower route, which in effect killed that project, because Mr. Chappelle, with that condition, is unable to give me his part of our bargain, which was to record my easement going the lower route. So when you get right down to it, he keeps saying he can build that project, but I'm not sure he can. Statement was made tonight that I have sold parking spaces to Mr. Kennedy. Not true. I've never sold a space to Mr. Kennedy. Mr. Belcher says that I rent spaces to him. You might be able to say I do, but I really don't. Mr. Kennedy and I have a reciprocal business agreement where we allow him to park up to 30 cars on our lot when their space is available in exchange for our guests being able to use the health club free of charge. That's a reciprocal business agreement. It can be canceled any day. There is no sale and no rent. The architect says that the condominiums are much nicer with garages underneath. But if you look at that plan closely, I don't think you would want to buy one of those units. You have a parking space in front of the garage that is sandwiched between two walls with only 9 feet between them. You have to drive through that first to get to your garage, and then somebody parks there, and they're going to have a hard time just getting out of their vehicle with their groceries. And then you have a full flight of stairs to go up to get to a living space. Where the approved plan, where the garages were on the west side, you walk straight into the living area. You don't have to walk up a whole flight of stairs. In addition, to build those garages underneath takes a massive excavation in the range of 8 to 10 feet with massive retaining walls. It's not a good plan. I doubt seriously that it'll be workforce affordable. The architect indicated that when he was asked where our traffic goes now, it does go straight out, has for the last 10 years. And it's not going through open space, it's going through a paved driveway. It's been in existence for the 10 years. On that turn and radius study, could you put up the plan, one that shows the turn and radius? If you look at the lower end of that turn radius, that's exactly where they're putting the new parking spaces because they've moved the road further to the west. So now that turning radius study is, which we've never agreed to anyway, don't believe it works. Now it certainly doesn't work because you've pulled the two driveways closer together, making the turn more difficult. A new turning study would have to be done in order to make that work. We have presented to you what we think would be a safe turning radius based on our engineer's analysis. And that's what we would demand if we were somehow required to go back to the upper driveway, which nobody wants. It's not safe to run our trucks and buses through there. Question was asked, how many trucks do we have? Which reminds me, I've got some pictures I can show you so you can see the type of buses that are going through, trucks that are going through there. We have as many as 4 to 6 trucks a night. Not every night, but several nights a week. There's also a couple of pictures in there showing parking and how severe the parking problem is. I was there at 9:30 Monday morning. That entire lower two lots, totally full of cars. I mean, completely. You couldn't find a parking place, and they were parking over in Casa Grande's lot. It's a severe problem that should be solved with this project. I'm not understanding how the city could allow this building, which is 5,000 feet over the normal maximum, can allow that to be, that extra 5,000 feet to be built. Now, how many parking spaces is that? In addition, the city, to this point, is allowing Chappelle to count all of my parking spaces towards his parking, which should not be allowed. They're also counting, allowing him to count all 19 spaces of Chappelle's parking easement towards this project. That shouldn't be allowed, especially with the parking problems that are existing. Mr. Kennedy, or I'm sorry, Mr. Chappelle, purchased this property with these easements existing. He knew they were there. I don't know why he insists on encroaching on them. I have a letter from him from 2005, which I think you have in your package, that promises that he will not encroach on my easements with any new plan. Why is he doing it? That's a question the city should ask him. We think both exits should be left open. They've been working well for 10 years or more. And again, nobody wants our traffic going through those, that upper parking lot. We're not opposed to the care facility. In fact, we think it's an excellent idea. We think it's a good project, but we think it's too big for the site. It needs to be scaled down. The parking needs to be solved. And all we really want is to have our easements honored. I would request the council to deny this project tonight in favor of a better design.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
Hello, I'm Kevin Kennedy, owner of Kennedy Club Fitness. And I've been involved with this property since 1986 or 87, I think, when Russ and I purchased it together. Personally, I'm in favor of development. I would love to get this property cleaned up and organized, and I think there's got to be a good design with all the easement restrictions. That being said, if I were the developer on this project, I would have gotten together with all of my neighbors and owners of the property and worked out the best solution for everybody. The first time I ever met with the applicants was last Wednesday, and then I did talk to Rush yesterday, but I made it to the first two planning commission meetings, but I was not consulted on this at all, and I do have some easement rights on the lower lot down there. I wanted to give you kind of a brief history of how that S-turn actually happened. Back in 1987, when we were buying the property, I was trying to line up the easement. There was an easement that went up to Oak Park that the city said they'd never allow, and that had to be abandoned. And then there was the easement that was given to the hotel that was built probably 5 years prior to that. And about the time they were about ready to open the doors, they said, well, you have to have your fire emergency exit out the back of the hotel. And it wasn't there. And at the time, Reuben Cavitt owned the property, except for that one last corner there was owned by Dr. Manning. And Dr. Manning didn't like Lee Webb at all, and he was the guy that was building the hotel. And so he would not let him put the easement across his property. Otherwise, we wouldn't even be here tonight arguing this. If Cavitt had owned all four of those lots, the easement would have gone straight across and out the back where it should have gone the whole time. So when I got the property, they had put the easement in, and it kind of went up through the back of my building. And so I had to go to the Loxamanas at that time, who owned the hotel, and actually bring the 24 easement down so that we could build our building and get the easement coming through. So I was the one that actually had the negotiation of that turn and tightened it up so that we could get it down to the next driveway, to the upper driveway. Whether there's a space missing in there or not, I don't know. I had an engineer that did that for me. I don't believe it is missing, but there is. That was my doing, getting that easement re-put through that way so that it would go up that way. At the time, Dr. Manning still owned that property, so he wasn't going to be open to us letting the easement go straight across there. But anyways, that was the history of that whole going up through our property. In 2002, when we finished our building, the city did require that we close off that upper exit because they wanted the two driveways across from the church to be right across from each other and not the upper driveway open because that was unsafe. So we had a berm across there for, I think, 4 or 5 years and some plants in the way there so that they couldn't turn in. We never did take out the approach, but we did have a berm across there. I'm not sure what there was a development that Russ had to do in one of his develops, I think with the office building, where they had to move the fire hydrant again, and at that time it was allowed to be opened, and the bottom exit was used, or the bottom entrance and exit there. We are having parking problems, there's no doubt. If you've been on the property during any of our mornings, Monday through Friday, you know, we were given a parking reduction based on the typical use of a health club. And a typical use of a health club is they're really busy at 5 and 6 in the morning before work, and they're really busy at 5 and 6 at night after work. But unfortunately, the market of Rio Grande wasn't such. Our market base is housewives and retired people, and we have a huge morning crowd. We didn't know that when we were building the place. So we have a tremendous impact there at 9 to 11 o'clock. As anyone who's been a member or been by there knows how that goes. We do have a couple of parking, you know, we've tried to do the best we could with getting our employees off the lot. So we have a reciprocal agreement with the church across the street for overflow parking that we require our staff to park there or in the 30 spaces that are kind of the lower out-of-the-way spots at the hotel. And we do have a reciprocal agreement only in just membership. We give them memberships in lieu of trying to help with the parking problems that are created on the site. So we tried to do our part, but there's still a parking problem. But I do believe that if the right development were on this property and we cleaned up some of the parking, I think if maybe if you built a 10-story building and had the rest of it parking, it might be, you know, reasonable that that would work out. But having it as flat as it is, there's just not a lot of space. And, you know, as most developers try to do, they try to put 10 pounds of manure in a 5-pound bag. And I know the reasons you have to do that, because you got to get your money back out of a project. I don't know what if there is a need for assisted living. It seems like a great use, and it seems like it would not be a parking demand type use. It does seem rather large for the project. I'm also concerned about the condos because when they were good when the whole thing was going to be a condo development, but now that there are just 8 condos there and you've got 8 families living in a commercial complex like this, it just doesn't seem to fit. I understand their logic in trying to put that in, and I'm not totally opposed to it, but it just doesn't seem to fit in this design. You know, people don't just have one car to park in their garage. They usually have, if it's a two-bedroom place, they've got another car. There's usually 2 cars they have to park. And, you know, we just know they're going to park in those areas. But since I had my meeting with Mr. Belcher, they assured me that, you know, they're going to be able to write up some CC&Rs that I'll be a part of. And I would not commit to relinquishing any of my easements if I weren't party to having those CC&Rs in our favor. So before that, I never knew there was going to be any CC&Rs, and I thought people could park anywhere and have the garages open and dogs and kids riding their bikes through the parking lot anytime they wanted to. But there's going to have to be some restrictions on the living, I think, if that's allowed. That being said, I believe, like Mr. Bunnell, that for the last 10 years, the access has been straight out and both directions. That to me seems like the most reasonable and safest way. I don't know what the logic is with the city. I've been told by the applicant that the city is requiring in only, and that's safer than having out only. And I don't understand the logic behind that. Maybe because you get people off the street faster rather than having more people go on the street. But why couldn't you have 2 outs and 1 in rather than 2 ins and 1 out? I don't get the logic, other than the fact that the portico has to be there in the design. So I think I dictated that issue. Other than that, I'm open for questions, and that's all I have.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else who would like to come forward?
Good evening. I'm Kathy Tamura, and I represent Pismo Medical Properties, who you're probably all saying, who is that? That is the entity that owns the building that is being referred to as Chapelle 2 on your diagram. So I just want to clarify a few things and share our concerns with you briefly. First, there was a question about adding parking to the side of the building. There was a surgery center as one of our tenants there, and that area is for patient loading, so we can't change that. What you can't see from that diagram also is that it would be a very sharp turn there, adding any spots. There were some garbage containers there and whatnot, so I don't think it would be feasible even if we could do that. The second issue is with the condominiums. There are, I believe, 4 parking spots that are going to be reserved for those condominiums, and then the rest are supposed to be non-exclusive. But with the backyards backing up to those spots, our concerns are that those would become condominium additional parking. So we would ask that any approval of the plan include a requirement that the CCNRs restrict those spots to the medical center's use only, not to the condominiums, or exclude the condominiums. We also do have some concerns about the changing of the ingress egress and whether an adequate traffic study has been done for the plan as a whole as it now stands. It's just my understanding that some of the traffic studies were either limited or done 8 to 10 years ago, and so may not be relevant. So we would ask the city to review that in light of the problems that all of the people have been expressing, and in light of the fact that it may not have been done sufficiently for the project as it now stands. Any questions for Pismo Medical Properties?
Okay, thank you for your comments. Anyone else? All these people and no one else? Okay, going once, going twice. We're going to close the general public comment period. Once again, we typically give the applicant an opportunity to come back and address some of the questions that perhaps came up during the general comment session. So let me ask the applicant, do you want to make any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll be brief. The Planning Commission, I think, in its lengthy 2 hearings, addressed most of the issues that you heard tonight. I didn't hear anything new that we didn't hear at the Planning Commission. However, I did want to make a point, and Mr. Bunnell was commenting about the S-turn here. The S-turn is actually improved. The turning is improved by the plan because this corner here is shifted 6 feet to the north. So instead of going up and around, now these turn will go actually more this way. So we actually improved the turning radius, and traffic engineer for the city will be able to determine that in its review of the final plans. And I assure you, we won't make the situation worse. We do intend to restrict parking in the upper area for residents in this area here. We have some spaces that are available. So we do have the ability, and I have assured Mr. Kennedy and also Dr. Farrell that we would be limiting resident use up here so that those spaces remain available. So CCNRs will be reviewed by the city, and we'll be able to work with staff to work through that issue as well as I believe the others. By the way, we are indifferent to whether the traffic goes out this way or in this way, but we're responding basically to discussions with staff about how to configure that. So we weren't trying to make things difficult for Mr. Bunnell or Mr. Kennedy. It's just the best we could do, we felt, with the traffic information that we had. So if you have any other questions, everybody's available to respond.
Okay, thank you.
I'll be quick. Thank you for the opportunity. Just gathering from what I've heard, there's, as Mr. Belcher said a moment ago, there's really no surprises. Everybody's saying the same thing that have been said before Planning Commission and so forth, and And we've not only done our best to deal with them, but by the mere fact of 12 spaces being created since the 4-1 approval, are taking a substantial step further in that direction. And it seems to me, just kind of boiling down what I've heard here this evening, of like, the only other thing that I could see doing with this site right here of the 8-unit condos, it seems to me like everybody is saying, you know, sorry about that. That's my ineptness. Anyway, seems like there's a relative consensus community-wide, even within this room, that the assisted living is recognized as a need, which it demographically is and community-wise is. So if I were going to do something different with that other lot other than 8 condos, you know, I think even as I've met with you council members over the past week, I've been, you know, if you guys have an idea, shoot it my way, because I'm just trying to create the best site, the best plan that I can. The only other thing that I've really entertained doing besides the 8 condos would be putting a professional space there, like basically medical space. But have you been down Halcyon recently? This community really doesn't need additional medical space. In addition to that, the parking demand and the parking load of the medical space is going to take us in the wrong direction. By placing the residences here and giving parking for the residences, I have something that actually works on the site. If I do medical office, it's not only not needed by the marketplace or by the community, it's very parking intense, as we all know, and now I'm taking the parking issue in the wrong direction. So I've done the best that I could. I just wanted to, you know, say I've thought about all these other things. If you or anybody else has a better idea, I'm perfectly happy to go with it, but I appreciate your consideration in regard to the regard to the assisted living facility. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. That will close the public hearing portion of 9B. We're going to bring this back to the council. We'll start with Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think this is my third rendition of this project since 2002. There's been a little bit of disconnect about what I've heard about the shared parking on the south. I've heard parties get up and say, oh, that was just bad information given to the city. I've heard that was the way it was all along. I've had Mr. Chappelle tell me that if this project, once he got all his ducks in a row, other than the easements, he could rock and roll and start building this building. I find that hard to believe. That being said, I think this, because of the original approval with the Kennedy Center, is always going to have parking issues, and that's just part of the issue that we're dealing with now. I am still concerned about creek runoff. I'm assuming city staff can double check that and design it in a way that's most efficient to get the water, from my view, away from the creek if it's got any particulates in it or whatever they. But you know, I would like you to revisit that to make sure that's done in the best way, use it could. I think the units in the middle of the parking lot are really poor. I can't remember any other place where we've done something like that. I have real concerns about what the quality of life is going to be for the people in those units and how it's going to work. But it is an approved project that he has previously. He's correct on that. So it is what it is. But it just sticks out like a sore thumb, if you ask me. It just doesn't look right to me. So I'm struggling with the project, but I kind of feel like we created a problem when we allowed, when we based the parking based on what we thought the parking would be at Kennedy Fitness, and it was actually something different. And everything stems from that. So I kind of feel like we have to move forward knowing what we know now and try to do a better job going forward. Last time I was here, I was sat through a whole planning commission meeting, and it looked to me like you had an 18% parking reduction, and now it seems all of a sudden there is no reduction, and I don't quite understand the math there. I don't quite understand how we got there, so I'd like to hear that again from staff, but something doesn't work there. I know that they created 12 more spaces, but that didn't deal with the 18% reduction that we talked about the last meeting. So I'm still trying to figure out what I'm going to do, Mayor. I'm just really on the fence, and I want to hear the wisdom of the other council people before I make a decision. I'm leaning towards approving it, but I clearly have misgivings on some of the issues. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Could we bring up the slides that I provided? Okay. I want to start off with the parking issue. I've been over to the site four times in the past 36 hours. This was yesterday morning, about 8:15, when I had to go get a blood test done. And that's looking at where the condominiums are going to be. There's an awful lot of cars parked in there. Next slide, please. There's another angle of the cars parked up in there. Keep going if you would. Now we're looking down towards where the assisted living, west end of the building would be, and that's pretty crammed in there also. You can see a garbage truck coming out there also. Next slide, please. Another shot of the same cars. Next slide. Now we're going to get into the area of this is right where the assisted living facility is, and then the next one, those are cars parked off the roadway. Same thing, the assisted living facility. Next slide. That woman is getting ready to cross the street with her exercise mat under her arm. Next slide. Because she parked over there. I don't think that anyone took that in consideration. Now we move forward to today. This was about 11:15. I went over there, and there's less people. It's less crowded, although that is still the area over by the Pismo Medical Facility, the dirt lot. Next slide. Fewer people parked back towards where the hotel is. Next slide. You see a couple people parked on the dirt there. I guess I'm assuming those are people that are using Kennedy Nautilus. Next slide. Nobody's parked on the wrong side of side of the road where the assisted living facility will be. That's it. I think that's all the slides I have. Parking has been terrible here for a number of years. It's not going to get any better with this plan. I think we have a real problem that we exacerbated by approving the project back in 2006. We said yes, go ahead and put in the condominiums and the 24 units, living units, and I regret that, I have to say. In hindsight, going back and looking at the situation on that facility and that property, that was a bad decision. That's one of the ones I regret having made here. I think the density for this project as proposed is just too much, both for the assisted living facility, and there may well be a need for an assisted living facility, but maybe just not that big. The eight condominiums or townhomes that are in the center of this project, I think, are just not a compatible use with the rest of the facility. Tim, I can give you another example of a living unit stuck in the middle of a parking lot. It's right back here. The one house that's out there, and we built the parking lot around it, and the people are allowed to stay back there for as long as they want. But that is not, the quality of life for that, I agree with you, is certainly not the best. So I think that we do have a real problem with compatibility. The easement issue, I've heard and seen in writing some radically different opinions from the two sides on this. And I guess there's more than two sides now. The Kennedy Center has their easements also. And that's not something we as the city council are going to adjudicate. That's something that's going to go to court. You're going to solve that if you can't come up with a solution on your own. I can't approve the negative declaration because of the circulation issues. Taking a look at the vehicles, I went in this evening about 10 after 5. I could barely get off the street, off of James Way, into the parking lot because the people trying to park in that first area there. I think the circulation as planned here will not be very effective, particularly given the number of vehicles we're now hearing from Mr. Bunnell that come and go in terms of trucks and larger vehicles. I'd like to see a little bit more study put into that. I cannot approve the negative declaration, and I can't approve this tonight.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Barnidge.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had a bunch of questions for the landscaper, and I feel bad. I don't know where David is. He's probably in the conference room. Oh, he's right there. I don't see you, David. So I don't think we're going to get there, but maybe in the future. I'm sorry you had to come tonight and sit through all this, because I did, if I thought it might go forward, I did have some things that I thought would make the project better. And so anyway, I won't go into the landscaping right now. I saw this project on Planning Commission, and I had reservations about the infill residential. I thought it wasn't a place, even if it was affordable, I didn't think that I would want to live there. Looking at it again, there were some improvements that they that Mr. Lee needs that. The parking, I took pictures as well, but they're the same as Joe's pictures, because I go to Kennedy out in the mornings, and I took four or five pictures. I sent them to Matt, and it's the New Year's resolution time. Everybody's at the gym at that time, but it's very, very impacted the last couple days, the pictures I sent to Matt. But what's disappointing is, you know, Kennedy, they're using Mr. Chappelle's property to park, and he's allowed them to do so, and there's really, you know, there's nowhere else for them to go, and I understand that. But at the same time, he needs to be able to develop his property, and he can't just build parking for the center. He needs to be able to build something to be able to make some money. And so I'm not for approving the project as it sits tonight, but something needs to be built there, and no matter what he builds there, there's still going to be a parking problem, because there's already a parking problem. I don't know how to solve it. I've tried to think about how to solve it. I know there's the access at the church, because I see people crossing James Way, which is dangerous. There's lots of parking at the motel. There's always that whole bay of parking, and so that's really underutilized. And but I don't know how we can all get together and figure that out, because it's the parties aren't really agreeing at this point. I think those are my thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
Yep, I could just start with a couple of questions for staff to clarify. If you missed, this is the ingress egress. I mean, I'm familiar with this, because this is also the third time I've seen it. This relates, and I'll just, if I'm wrong, correct me. I guess I'll just say the question answer part. We required this because of what we were concerned about was conflicting movements. If we had people exiting on the bottom driveway turning left, you would have them directly in conflict with people turning right 6 feet away from the upper driveway, which is why we restricted it, not for this project, but if I'm correct, we restricted it all the way back in the residential project as well.
I'm not entirely 100% sure about the restriction on the lower driveway for the previous project, except that... Give me 1 second.
We may have closed it for that, actually. Think about it.
The previous approval, condition of approval number 17, driveway option number 3 shall be implemented, which has all traffic directed towards the upper westerly driveway and closes off a lower easterly driveway, allowing for emergency access only.
Okay, so it was closed to the public in the previous one?
Yes.
Okay. So that was approved. That's why the ingress, if you'll remember back, Mr. Kennedy, that's why the ingress egress is the way it is. I also want, since I had you guys research this for me, and I just kind of want to get it into the record, is the original, as far as we can tell, the original purpose of the secondary access or easement was primarily for emergency access, but there was a secondary purpose that it was considered to, because of its traffic, this is for the motel, because of its traffic impact, was really needed a second, like a subdivision would need a second second entrance, just for traffic circulation.
That's correct.
Okay. But there was nothing in there about buses or trucks or anything of that nature. Okay. I just wanted to have that in the record. I think when we see all these pictures, and I'm glad that Councilwoman Barnish brought up, you know, that yes, we look at these pictures, and clearly people are parking in exactly the locations where these buildings are proposed to be built. And yet, how could you possibly say that the only thing he can do is build this parking for Kennedy Center? So that I recognize that there clearly is a parking need, I don't see it as a requirement of Mr. Chappelle to supply that need. If everybody shared in the agreement, in the original agreement, and needs to make their parking fit where they have. I think what we've seen is that over time is that we've seen what are actually projects that have less and less parking requirements. When we went from the 250,000 square foot medical facility, it had significantly more parking than did the residential. When we go to this, we see what is, I don't know whether significantly more parking, but it's less parking than the residential that's already approved. So I think that even though we can look at a really scary picture and see that we're going to displace all of these cars, in reality, the official project has less and less parking requirement is what we're officially approving. I do think the condos, I'll say the condos were better when they were combined with the residential. That was a better, the condos worked better when they're all by themselves. They're certainly not as valuable. They're certainly not as attractive. I doubt that they may sell, but they'll be rentals in the end. I mean, could be a possible starter home, but I don't see this as a likely workforce housing unless you can consider it as rental housing. So I guess where I'm at tonight is this is a better project than we had before. Yeah, we could reduce the size of the building even more and gain some more parking. And I can see going in that direction. My feeling tonight is that this is a better project than we had before based on the environmental impact that we're considering and that is approvable as it is. So I'd be prepared to vote for approval of this project this evening. Because once again, it is less what I'll call official impact, even if it is more actual impact. And the second issue on the whole easement thing is I believe it meets the easement as it's drawn here meets at least the city's original requirement. Whether it's grown from that over time, I don't know. That's not our concern. Our concern is that in fact the original intent of the easement is met, and I believe it is met by this. So I would be prepared to vote in favor of this evening.
Okay, thank you. Well, this has been a challenge, and I know it's been a challenge for several of you in the audience. Certainly been a challenge for me. Because I think I've sat through all of the previous submissions and that have come before the council. you know, this is as has been mentioned, this is the third time that we have processed a submittal from this applicant. It's gone through the city's commissions and committees. It's the third time it's gone to a planning commission, and it's the third time it's come before the city council. As the Mayor Pro Tem indicated, in every case, every previous case, we've tried to make adjustments. We haven't approved those projects for a number of reasons. And now we have this project in front of us, and I just want to kind of go through the components. Some of what I'm going to say has already been mentioned and elaborated on, but I guess I have a little bit of a different perspective. It's been mentioned that the fact that the city does not have a care facility for people who are memory impaired, the Alzheimer's facility. We desperately need one of those. For whatever reason, that disease is on the rise, and we have no facilities to care for those folks. You can pick up the newspaper you know, every day and read about somebody walking away from a facility or a home, and unfortunately the outcome is not always pleasant. So I think that is a benefit to the community. One of the issues that I had in previous submittals was the fact that we had a lot of density, and we had density in close proximity to the creek, which I know is a concern of Councilmember Brown's. There were aspects of previous submittals that I did not support. But what I see in front of us now is different. We have lesser density and proximity to the creek. We are now using bioswales in other parts of the city, and we're also using the filtering process and in the outfalls. And it's not as if we have a choice in the matter. We have a stormwater runoff requirement, standards that are set by Department of Water Resources, and they're very stringent. We don't have a choice. We have to put these things in place. So I'm comfortable with the interaction of the drainage and the proximity to the creek. The other thing that hasn't been mentioned, and I realized, and we've put these things on paper, we've sent them to Sacramento for approval, and yet, for one reason or another, we don't seem to be meeting our housing requirements. So I think we have that we need to consider as well. The pictures that Councilmember Costello showed are pretty compelling. I'm particularly concerned about the one picture of the person who was parking across the street and attempting to cross James Way. From a liability standpoint, that makes me nervous. But the other thing that I think came through, and the Mayor Pro Tem mentioned it in some of those photos, is that as you know, focused as we were on the amount of cars that were parked in that lot, if you looked closely, you saw that they were parked haphazardly. In some instances, there were 4, 5, 6 feet between people parking next to each other. They were not in organized parking spaces, which makes a difference when you look at parking density. When there's no lines drawn, people will park wherever they want and however they want, and that has a tendency to perhaps not make the best visual presentation. And I recognize that that this is not, even if we approve this project tonight, this is not the end of the line. It's been made very clear that there are still major issues that need to be resolved. But when you focus on those issues, I should back up and say, I think in terms of the city is concerned, I think our staff collectively has spent on the previous project submittals, this one, we've probably spent hundreds of hours trying to process projects that have come forth from this applicant. In my mind, that's enough. What I want to see us do is have a project that meets our standards, our requirements, has been processed through all of our committees and commissions. And then in terms, and we have satisfied, in my opinion, our municipal requirement. So what looms out there is whatever civil outcome is going to be forthcoming, which could, in fact, result in, yet, and I know this, in yet another project submittal coming back. So if a civil action drives a revision to this project, so be it. We'll deal with it. We have no problem with that. And I suspect that that might be the case. But in order to get that started, I think we need to have a municipal approval of this project. If we're ever going to have a period put on this entire effort, we're going to have to keep this thing moving through the process, recognizing that I know Mr. Bunnell is not going to be satisfied with it, and I know that there are still going to be some issues with the other tenants on site. But I think in order to keep this thing moving, recognizing that, yes, there is going to be some civil action that takes place, and there's going to have to be a resolution to that civil action. And maybe it's a decision of the courts. And maybe that decision will then, as I indicated, result in a revised project. So be it. Just looking at and listening to everybody tonight, Mr. Chappelle asked if we had any ideas. I'm thinking at this point that he ought to get together with Mr. Kennedy and build a annex to the existing health club. And if you do that, then maybe the parking situation would resolve itself. But I'm, you know, all of that said, I think in order to drive this to a conclusion, however and whatever that might be, we have to keep this thing moving. And so I'm going to support this tonight, again, with the understanding that that it's not the end of the line and that there may well be yet another submittal, but we won't know that unless we keep this thing moving forward. So so I'm ready to approve this and keep this process moving. So that's my opinion. Anyone else have any comments? Okay, then if not, then I will entertain a motion from someone.
I'll move a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande adopting mitigated negative declaration.
Well, I don't really know, but those are the plans that were submitted. So I think as long as you you indicate the development must be consistent with the plans presented at the January 27, 2014 council meeting in the preamble to Exhibit A, we're okay.
Right, so with the plans that were delivered this evening, work? All right. That's my motion.
All right. We have a motion, and is there a second? I'll second. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
No.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
And Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Okay, we have a...
Is there a second piece to this, by the way? Was there a second approval that we had to do, or is that just... Okay, all right. I just thought I saw one.
Good. Yours was a yes, Krista?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, everyone, for sitting through that.
I'm little. I'm petite. Everything about me is petite.
Okay. All right. All right. We've had another request for a short break. So council will once again recess for 5 minutes. Council is back in session. And we're going to be addressing our final public hearing, which is 9C. This is consideration of a staff project 13-007, resolution amending the design guidelines and standards for the design overlay district. And we are referring to Traffic Way and Station Way. Is this yours, Matt?
That's mine again. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. This is, again, a consideration of staff project for a resolution amending the design guidelines and standards for design overlay district D2.11, Traffic Way and Station Way. Just so everybody is aware of exactly what we're talking about, this is the current traffic way enhancement concept plan. It shows the location of where the overlay basically exists. So you have it stretching from the property behind and adjacent to the Chevron station on East Grand Avenue all the way down, including Station Way and Traffic Way, down to essentially the mobile station on Traffic Way, with varying preferred land uses in those different categories as shown. Now, the D211 design guidelines were approved by the City Council in October of 2003. The original intent was to enhance the specialized mix of uses in the Traffic Way Mixed Use District. Now, the majority of that area is actually dedicated to auto sales currently. And when these were developed, the property at the corner of Traffic Way and East Cherry Avenue was identified for visitor-serving uses such as a hotel. And just so we're clear, this is the property at the corner of Traffic Way and East Cherry Avenue that I'm referring to that's under consideration for tonight. Now, in terms of proposed modifications, staff is proposing to modify essentially the preferred permitted use on the subject property from visitor-serving to auto sales and related uses. The proposed modification makes the property consistent with the existing character of Traffic Way, again, being that the dominant use there is auto sales and related activities. Other permitted uses in the Traffic Way Mixed Use District can still be proposed and approved. However, an additional finding must be made that the auto sales are not feasible due to site-specific building or property configurations or conditions. So it still does allow for the typical permitted uses to be approved, however, with that additional finding. If the council approves staff's recommendation tonight, here's the new proposed enhancement plan. And as you can see, the only change that was made is down at that corner property. It's been changed from visitor serving to auto services. The Planning Commission did review the proposed amendments of the design guidelines at a public hearing on January 7th. Members of the commission were in support of the amendments and agreed that they were type of use. However, as staff already mentioned, the existing permittable uses in the Traffic Way Mixed Use Zone can still be approved with the additional finding. But he was in support of the change from visitor serving to auto sales. Notice of public hearing was mailed to all property owners as well as all occupants of properties within 300 feet of the subject properties, as well as being published in the Tribune and on the city's website and at City Hall on the 17th. Tonight's agenda and staff report were again posted on the city's website and at City Hall on January 24th. And the only inquiry staff has received was prior to the Planning Commission's review of the project, and the one member of the public asked if there was a current proposal for auto sales on that corner property. And it's important to note that no such application has been received by the city. And that's staff's presentation. Planning Commission does recommend that the City Council adopt the proposed resolution amending the design guidelines and standards for the design overlay district D2.11 on Traffic Way and Station Way.
Questions for Matt?
No
questions? All right. This is a public hearing. If there's anyone in the audience who would like to come forward on 9C, this would be your opportunity. Anyone? Okay. Seeing no one, we will close the public hearing portion of 9C. Bring this back to the council. We'll start with Councilmember Costello.
Mr. Mayor, I have no problems with this tonight. It does seem like a rational and logical move to take at this time. I know back 8 or 9 years ago we thought we were going to have the ability to have hotel services there, but that never materialized, so I think this is probably a beneficial change. I'll support it tonight.
Okay, very good. Councilmember Brown.
As will I.
And Councilmember Barnett?
I would agree with my two colleagues.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem?
I'll support as well.
As will I. We'll make it unanimous. I'll entertain a motion.
Read this resolution read.
Mr. Mayor, I move a resolution of the City Council of the City of Rio Grande amending the design guidelines and standards for Design Overlay District D2.11, Trafficway and Stationway, Staff Project 13-007, citywide.
Thank you. Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnett?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Okay, moving on to item 10, continued business. We have none. Item 11 is new business. We have none. Item 12 is City Council reports. I will go first very quickly. The RTA did meet. We had a joint session with the Council of Governments to elect the president and vice president of both the COG and the RTA for 2014. The incoming or the new COG president is Mayor Higginbotham from Pismo Beach, and the vice president is Supervisor Arnold. The big item on the RTA agenda was to approve contracts for North County Transit, both the City of Paso Robles and the City of Atascadero are now contracting with the RTA to assume both management and operations of transit services. As far as the Council of Governments, we made our appointments to CalCOG, the National Association of Regional Councils, and the two rail committees. And we also received an update on our regional transportation plan. That update included financial expectations and projections. And as usual, the projections are not good. The revenue anticipated from both the state and the federal government are insufficient to fund our current RTP, and as a result, the COG staff is going to be going back to the drawing board and bringing forth some recommendations and modifications on how we can satisfy as much as we can with reduced revenue. I was unable to attend the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting. Mayor Pro Tem is my alternate, and we'll give a report on that, I assume. And with that, we will go to the Mayor Pro Tem. So.
Well, with that, I'll start with the San District. Really wasn't much of a meeting. I will say that from the report from the that the plant is operating really well. As some of you may know, we've switched from really being a chemical plant to being a biological plant. They did go through this entire period without any problems at all, including during their cleaning operations, which are sometimes do create problems. We did have a closed session meeting on for the launch, taking to our hotel partners to see if they're interested at this point in pursuing that at all. The South County Transit, really the big news is there, in fact this is happening on the 2nd, is that if you remember about a year and a half ago, we split Route 23 into two parts, 23 and 24. They were essentially the same route, but they were both half-hour loops, which saved you some time if you were going to some of the locations on the east side of the freeway. But what they found was that it's just a little bit too long a route, and as a consequence, the buses were always just a little bit late. They were missing the connections with the RTA. So what they've done now is combined that back to a single route, so it's a one-hour loop. So the bad news is that if you're going somewhere and it's short to get there, it's going to be long to come back. So, but the good news is that because they've shortened the route a little bit, they will be on time and they will be able to meet the RTA, bus. The other issue there is we actually saw a decline in ridership for the first time probably in 4 or 5 years. Could be an anomaly, but it could also be a trend, kind of an important trend since we're now trying to meet the federal the federal farebox ratio, and our farebox ratio actually fell. So staff will be coming back with some proposals for how we might be able to increase revenues, but one of them will not be to simply increase fares, because their study shows that we would just lose the equal ridership to whatever we gained in funding. So it'll be some other mechanism. And I do not have a report on the JPIA. So I think it's all of mine.
Okay, yeah. Is that it?
Yeah.
All right, Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. APCD met, and most significant issue, I think, last meeting was a report on the continuation of the Moyer grants, and these are grants that funded by the Moyer legislation as well as other sources that provide grants to assist the replacement of school buses, replacement of agricultural engines. I think over the past 15 years, there's been about $10 million that's been administered, or even more than that, I think my numbers are low, administered by the APCD, going out directly to communities, to the school district, to people in the private sector, to reduce diesel emissions. And that program continues to be healthy and going forward. The efforts to work with the state parks continue to come up with some sort of mitigation measures that will work over on the dunes. And that's going to go on for a long time, I think. Five Cities Fire Authority met, very brief meeting last time. We swore in a new permanent employee and had a report on participation on the strike team. Here we are, and this was December, early January. We're talking about supporting wildfire efforts. So just showing how the situation in the state is. We sent an engine down to support the Gardena fire. Other than that, I have nothing else to report.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. IWMA didn't meet. They canceled their meeting. RAC actually had a quite extensive meeting about the district. They want to form up in Paso. You've probably been hearing about the property owners that want to have a voice in the whole water issue. So they're putting together a governance structure and a voting structure on how people vote for who's on the board, because it's going to be based on the size of property that you own, and it's going to deal with the unincorporated areas that don't have city governance or something like that, because they just want a voice at the table. And you definitely got a sense that the farming community is not going to sit back anymore and be an observer. They're going to be an active participant in any water discussions that go forward. And it's a interesting dynamic, because I think farmers for a long time, and I think we did as well, assumed that they would always have the water they needed and they would have priority. And now there's that friction that's happening, and they've decided they need to be more assertive. And so it's going to be interesting to see how this district in North County comes along. But it was quite the discussion. So you've probably read about it in the paper already, but it was quite the day. Thank you.
Okay. And Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. Joe attended the Zone 3 Water Advisory Board. So if you want to just...
I'll give you a quick report on that. The most significant issue that came out of the Water Advisory Board was the fact that the lake, Lopez Lake, is now down to, I think, a little bit less than 57% full. And they projected that it could get to the 26%.
Talk about some of the same things, and so they thought about combining some of those meetings, even having some of the subcommittees meet before or after the actual HSOC meeting so that everybody can be there at once. And not having so many meetings. And let's see, the tourism committee, I attended that, and that was fun. We looked at the new website that they put out recently and talked about possibly teaming up with Slow Wine. And the representative came from Slow Wine to talk to the group about teaming up with trying to get more people off the freeway through the village out to the wineries. Talked about possible billboard and also maybe some directional signs like they have in San Luis Obispo, the little white arrow signs. PISMO just did some of those, and so we talked about that. And then I think that was basically it. Yeah. Thank you.
Very good. All right. That concludes our reports, and we'll move to item 12, which is council communication. Any announcements, questions, clarifications? Yes.
I would like to put on a future agenda the issue that came up at the beginning of the meeting with the three speakers in the audience about possibly writing a letter to the supervisors about fracking.
Okay. Very good. I have two quick announcements, and they both involve the latter part of this week. Thursday, we have the chamber installation dinner, and that is where the city typically presents awards for additional awards for the Citizen of the Year, the Kentally Award winner, and also the Ambassador of the Year. And so I'll be doing that Thursday night. It would be great if we had council presence there. And if you're interested in attending, let Kitty know, and she can get that set up for you. If it's not too late, I don't know about that, if it is or not. And then Friday, we have the Channel County's League of Cities dinner, and Pismo Beach is hosting. I think it's at Ventana. And once again, that is... that's an affair where we like to have a full city table, so I'm hoping staff can join us and the council can make it as well. And once again, Kitty will set up the logistics for you. So like to have a good presence there. Any other communication? Staff communication, Steve? Anything?
Just to mention, since water conservation came up, just to remind you again and the public that our water conservation measures have been in place for some time now, but as a result of the current situation, we are stepping up enforcement. We've been doing a lot of public education on that. Press release has gone out. We're going to be doing a direct flyer, letting everybody know that we're going to be out there checking and then also reminding everybody of what those requirements are.
Okay. And then that takes us to our final community comments and suggestions. If there's anyone in the audience that would like to come forward on any item, whether it's on the agenda or not, this would be your final opportunity. Anyone? Okay, seeing no one, we will close our final community comments and suggestions. We have no closed session this evening. Thank you, Tim. And that takes us to our final item, which is adjournment. So thank you, everyone, for hanging in, and we are adjourned.